going to come back here at night and firebomb this place.
And all I want to see happen on my birthday is for Elon to be taken down. Yes.
Your words have consequences. And what happened after she said that about Elon Musk, she's a Texan in her own home state. After she said that, this morning, three explosive devices were found in Austin, Texas.
We are here live on the scene at the Tesla dealership where earlier today an incendiary device, a homemade bomb, was discovered having been planted. And, of course, this is typical or in line or as predicted by InfoWars.
I wonder if any folks are going to come back here at night and firebomb this place.
Crazy that we were here just a little over a week ago with Alex Jones, and he literally predicted to a guy blocking the road for us to even leave, a protester, that they were going to try to firebomb this place. And 8-9 days later, that's exactly what happened at the very location that we were at 9 days ago. I mean, Alex Jones was right.
Damaging a personal vehicle does not affect Elon. If anything, it's giving him more money to fix the vehicle that you damaged. Quite a lot of damage. He keyed this side as well, which, as you can see, this side, it even looks like it affected above the tire. This is a lot more damage.
This comes less than a week after a possible arson at a Tesla dealership in Kansas City.
So for this to be happening in Kansas, of all places, is super shocking.
Things spiraled out of control when a white SUV followed her and cut her off, stopping in the middle of the road.
Gets out and walks straight up to my door, window. So I cracked my window, and I said, what is for the problem? And he goes, you need to sell your car. This is a Nazi car. You're driving it. You need to sell your car.
It's just that they're just told you're bad. They're told you're evil. And then they just see you, and they just feel good, and they're going to get in your face. And so now these people, they're swatting people's families. They're swatting crew members' families here. They don't want to talk about it. Now the FBI is investigating. Now they're making arrests of people burning down the Tesla factories and charging them with federal crimes. So these people doing this need to understand, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to go to jail. But they're so enraged. They're so angry. They're so brainwashed. And they think that they are the good guys.
Do you really want to get Elon Musk out of politics? Yeah, the world's richest man, the most influential in history, is now calling the shots.
What has he done that really bothers you?
He's arrogant, drugged up, naive.
Welfare man, you're on your candid camera. You are. You got nothing better to do? You jealous? You jealous of the man? Is that it? Jealous loser. No, you're not. You're a communist, anti-American loser. You're jealous of success. That's what you are. Losers. Communist Marin County bums. Yes, you are. You're a loser. Why do you hate Musk? Why do you hate Musk? So what? You're a self-righteous moron. No, I won't be quiet. Who the hell do you think you are, you loser? You're going to go Kia Tesla now? Go Kia Tesla. Go ahead. Show what great people you are. Folks, you see the faces of losers? These self-righteous communists? They call themselves patriots. They are the poison of the earth.
You were recently on a Tesla takedown call, yeah, calling for violence on the 29th.
To be here, right?
Would you like to clarify your comments?
Good luck.
As you can see.
Congressman, will you condone violence at the Tesla?
Investigators say someone shot out his driver's side window with a BB gun as he drove through the town of Zebulon late Sunday night.
We have a family. We got kids, you know, so who knows if that would have gone through and I was driving with my kids or, it would have hit my buddy or something.
Vandalism and threats against the electric car brand continue to rise throughout the country. Authorities cracking down on public backlash against Tesla CEO Elon Musk.
They have misjudged the American people. Yeah, they'll be able to intimidate 10-20%, but the other 80% are pissed.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. InfoWars.com/.
When you think
second American Revolution. When you think 1776, when you think about what's happening in the world right now, you think about one place, and that's the InfoWar, because you're the InfoWar. And right now, you can spread the word and keep us on air more than ever by visiting thealexjonesstore.com. Over 400 kick-ass designs like this baby that I designed, and I think it's great. And they say the pen is mightier than the sword, and that's absolutely true, and that's what this is a walking billboard for freedom and to meet like-minded people and let globalists know we're the majority and we're taking the country back. Razor sharp stainless steel 10-inch battle blade, a 2025 upgrade on the famous World War II trench knife with the skull crusher, with the brass knuckles, and with that beautiful blade with the Spartan ride on it, with tip of the spear and the classic InfoWars on the other side. Fighting tyranny's never been so much fun. Get your blade, get your shirts, get your ball caps, get it all, and fund the Second American Revolution in the information war today at thealexjonesstore.com, and I salute you.
It's Thursday, March 27th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody and stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday morning. We're going to be in studio with Raw Egg Nationalist at 10 a.m. today. Very excited to talk to him. He, of course, was totally anonymous online for a long time until his identity was leaked by left-wing terror groups. But it turns out every time they unmask the identity of one of these right-wing anonymous accounts, they turn out to be like strikingly handsome geniuses. It's not going well for them. It's not going well for the left trying to unmask their enemies and being like, he is a successful family man. See? Do you see? He's a successful family man with a great paying job, and he does this on his side. On the side, isn't that terrible? And yeah, it completely backfires. So unlucky for them, they unveiled Raw Egg Nationalist's identity. And now he's able to come on the show in studio and talk to us about how they're poisoning us and trying to kill us in a number of different ways. So very excited to talk to him about that. I also want to go through some videos. I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to get them prepared during the break. But I've started watching this show, and it must be from the early 80s or like late 70s at the latest, called Yes Minister from the UK. I'm not sure if anybody's ever seen this, but it is crazy. It's one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. And I think it's due for a remake. I think we need a Yes President. Basically, the story, we'll have to get into it, because I don't want to describe it and then not show you the clips. I got to get the clips together. But it's basically about the deep state. Long story short, it's about the deep state. And it's amazing watching TV from 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that sounds exactly like what's going on today. And you realize, like, okay, it's been this way for a long time. And if anything, it's only gotten worse. But what we're dealing with here isn't exactly new. And it's funny because in this show, basically, you have this prime minister who is very vain and vainglorious and self-obsessed. And it's basically him just being controlled by the civil servants in the UK government and just how they manipulate him and how they get what they want out of him. And it's very insightful and it's very interesting to see these arguments being made. In a way, it's almost an argument in favor of the deep state. Yeah, there it is. And I've got some very, very pertinent clips to show you from the first season of that. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for that, because you're not going to want to miss it. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 27th of March, 2025.
Appeals court will not pause ruling that forced U.S. to reinstate federal workers. So this is a theme throughout today. Appeals courts upholding these ridiculous rulings. A U.S. appeals court on Wednesday refused to pause a judge's ruling requiring the administration of President Donald Trump to reinstate more than 17,000 workers at six agencies who lost their jobs as part of Trump's purge of the federal workforce. A 2-1 panel of the San Francisco-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said the Trump administration had failed to establish a federal judge erred by finding that agencies likely could not fire workers in the direction of the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, the Human Resources Department for the federal government. The Trump administration in court filings on March 17th said the agencies were working to reinstate the fired employees while temporarily placing them on paid leave. Wednesday's decision will be in place pending the outcome of the administration's appeal. The administration has also asked the Supreme Court to pause the judge's ruling. The decision applies to the Department of Defense, Department of Veteran Affairs, Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, Department of the Interior, and the Treasury Department. Probationary employees typically have less than 1 year and sometimes less than 2 years of service in their current role, although some are longtime federal employees. The mass firings of probationary workers was the first step in broader efforts by Trump and top advisor Elon Musk to drastically shrink the federal workforce and slash government spending. Most agencies said they fired a few hundred probationary workers, but others terminated far more. The Treasury Department fired more than 7,600 people, the Department of Agriculture about 5,700, and the Department of Veteran Affairs and Interior Department about 1,700 each, according to court filings. District Judge William Alsup in San Francisco said that OPM, which is closely tied to the White House, improperly ordered the six agencies to fire workers, even though it has no power to do so. On the same day, a judge in Baltimore, Maryland, separately ordered 25,000 probationary workers at 18 agencies being reinstated, but on different legal grounds. That case involves all the agencies subject to Alsup's orders except the Department of Defense, which is said to have fired about 360 probationary employees. The Trump administration has appealed that decision. A Richmond-based appeals court recently refused to pause the ruling pending the outcome of the case. The judge's rulings did not bar agencies from firing probationary workers at all, but took issue with the manner in which the terminations were conducted. Which, again, it's like they're ruling that you can't do it for two different reasons. I think that means neither reason is actually applicable. How can you not fire probationary workers, workers who were hired within the last year, especially since we have footage on camera of the Biden holdovers, or the people who were in power under Joe Biden, talking about all of the measures they were taking to prepare for Trump's incoming administration. In other words, everybody hired in the last year, I think, has to be looked at as a little bit suspect, as they could very well have been hired in the same way that the money was given out, as the undercover video caught the Treasury operative talking about throwing gold bars off the Titanic. It was the EPA throwing gold bars off the Titanic, just trying to fund as much as possible, as quickly as possible before Trump could get into office and stop them from stealing our money. Well, I also imagine they were hiring people as quickly as possible to try to, you know, fill up the positions before Trump could get in and actually use the government to its appropriate ends. So infuriating. And again, another blow to the Trump administration from the judiciary, with no, in my opinion, constitutional authority to interfere. Meanwhile, from Washington Post, appeals court upholds temporary block on Alien Enemies Act deportation. The Trump administration asked an appeals court to overturn Judge James E. Boasberg's temporary restraining order blocking the deportations. A federal appeals panel on Wednesday refused to allow the Trump administration to summarily deport migrants under a rarely invoked wartime power while litigation on the matter continues. The 2-1 decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. District delivered at least a temporary blow to the government, which argued that the U.S. District Judge James E. Boasberg's 2-week ban on deportations under the Alien Enemies Act usurped the executive branch's power to make national security decisions. The case began with the administration's effort to bypass immigration court hearings and deport hundreds of people it says are members of Venezuelan Trinde Aragua gang to notorious prison in El Salvador. It became a flashpoint in the growing tensions between President Trump and the federal courts. In upholding Boasberg's order Wednesday, the appellate panel stressed the temporary nature of the ban, which the judge imposed to prevent deportations until he could hear arguments on their legality. Circuit Court Judges Karen Henderson and Patricia Millett cautioned in separate opinions that their decision should not be read as a final judgment on the merits of the Trump administration's use of the Alien Enemies Act. I don't know why. I mean, I'm in favor of invoking the Aliens Enemy Act because that's what the law was written for and is being used to its purpose. And I think that's fine. On the other hand, I don't understand why the Trump administration has to invoke it. There are laws against coming into the country illegally. There are temporary protected statuses that can be revoked, and those people can be slated for deportation. I don't know what extra powers are given, except unless I guess you could get around any like civil court cases that would be filed to prevent the deportations. I just don't know if it's worth the legal workaround. I think there are ways to expedite this, perhaps without using the Alien Enemies Act. And I'm just worried Trump is doing things that are giving the judges perfectly reasonable justification for interfering in this sort of stuff. And the example is this. Tufts PhD student on visa arrested by immigration authorities, school says. Rumeyza Özturk is a Turkish national, according to her lawyer. And there's actually video of this arrest happening, and it's frankly kind of chilling. You see a woman walking down the street when she's approached from like every different angle, surrounded by plainclothes, masks, officers, I assume. I mean, we don't really know. We're not actually super sure what, you know, branch of the government carried out the arrest, but it looked an awful lot like a scene from a World War II movie, because this is what one could consider fascism, except that it's being done on behalf of Israel, so I guess that's different. I guess it's different when it's anti-Semitic wrongthink. So there you see the woman walking down the street and being surrounded by these plainclothes officers, all with these, whatever they're called, gaiters, masks, face coverings, arresting this woman and hauling her away. Now, as far as I know, there have been no charges filed against this person. And I also don't think she even participated in a protest, as far as I know. She did, however, write an op-ed against Israel. So there was that. So there was that. Which, again, it's almost like they're just being bad on purpose. So we covered yesterday and the day before pretty extensively the California student Chong, who came over from Korea when she was 7, valedictorian of her high school, participated in a protest on her college campus, only to find out that her legal status was revoked. She's going to be deported back to Korea, where she has no family, no connections, and probably doesn't even speak the language. Totally insane, but somehow they have this trick of turning conservatives into exactly who they say we are, getting conservatives to fulfill every negative stereotype of them as long as it has to do with Israel. And, you know, posting about this on X, or, you know, talking about it on the show, you get a lot of comments of just like, she was an illegal, she was a foreigner and she was protesting, tough luck, you got to get out of here, you got to leave. And what strikes me is the similarity from that to the way leftists talk about January 6th protesters, how like there's just something inhuman that enters into the mind of people when they're trying to justify their own brutal policies, I guess. But I mean, how many times have you seen or heard or in your own personal life tried to talk to somebody and just been like, this guy's an old man. He's a baker from Missouri. He went to January 6th. The doors were open for him. He high-fived the cops on the way in. and now he's being kept in solitary confinement for 7 months straight in a tiny concrete box with a fluorescent light that never turns off in freezing temperatures. And it's like, that's horrible. He didn't do anything wrong. And the left will just be like, well, he's a terrorist. Should have thought about it. Well, maybe he shouldn't have tried to overthrow the government then. Huh? Ever think about that, sweetie? And you're just like, what is wrong with you? Seriously, what is wrong? Like, what happened to you? What did they do to you to make you like this? This is awful. And then the same thing happens with the right wing when it comes to, like, protesting Israel. Like, here's this girl, just her college campus. She is American for all intents and purposes. I think if you are raised somewhere from 7 years old to, you know, 22, you tend to absorb the culture a little bit. She probably didn't even think of herself as an immigrant. She's probably like, oh, yeah, well, I came over when I was a kid. I think anyone under 10 sort of has that mindset. She goes, participates at a protest. The college campus, you know, says you have to leave. They don't want to. They get arrested for trespassing. And now she's going to be sent back to Korea. Now she's going to have her college career ruined. She's going to be sent to a place where she probably doesn't speak the language, definitely has no connections, no friends, no family, no ability to make money. That's cruel and unusual, right? And just like the leftists, you get the right wingers go, oh, she should have thought about that before trying to overthrow Israel. She should have thought about that before trying to genocide the Israelis, huh? Like, you mean the protest that she participated? You mean the peaceful protest where she sat on the floor in the college hall, college that she pays $50,000 a year to go to? That's the crime that you're saying is worthy destroying her life completely? Well, sorry, this is what I voted for. And it's like, all right, you're an idiot. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You're dumb. You're evil. You're an evil person. And you're the exact type of person with exactly the same motives as those left-wingers, you know, celebrating some grandpa rotting away in a jail cell because he happened to take an unapproved tour through the U.S. Capitol. Why can we not be human about this? Why can we not be human? But on the other hand, they do have that claim. They can say, well, she was protesting. Well, she was a foreigner who was protesting. And I'm too stupid to understand nuance or detail, so I hear a protesting foreigner, I say deport, right? But at least they have that. In this case, unless I'm not seeing something, I don't think she participated in a protest. I don't think she was arrested for, you know, disturbing the peace. They don't actually give a reason in this article as to why this happened. What they did find was that she engaged in activities in support of Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization that relishes the killing of Americans. A visa is a privilege, not a right, glorifying and supporting terrorists. Glorifying and supporting terrorists who kill Americans. Do we not see the slippery slope that we're on? Can we not identify how this is a stepping stone towards total oppression in this country? I mean, are we really having to make the same arguments about things like the Patriot Act that we did in 2002? It's exactly the same arguments where people are going, hey, this is destroying our rights. This is total curtailment of our constitutionally protected Bill of Rights. Like, this is bad. They're justifying spying. They're justifying military action on U.S. soil. They're getting rid of habeas corpus and all these other lawful protections. Like, this is really bad. People go, well, it's for terrorists. You aren't on the side of terrorists, are you? You go, okay, but there's nothing in this language that differentiates between a legitimate terrorist that's actually killing people and an anti-government activist who just wants to be left alone on a farm in Idaho. No differentiation legally between those two. And without those very distinct and severe differences or like legal discrepancies, then you're opening the door for just total oppression of the American people. And the argument against that was you're a terrorist if you don't support this. We're just in that exact same situation. I'm sitting here going, they're justifying arresting these. They're not going after illegal. These are legal immigrants. These people that followed the system, that were did it the right way. This woman has now been arrested and will likely face deportation or maybe imprisonment without a trial because she wrote an op-ed that criticized Israel. Because she, as they put it, quote, glorified and supported terrorists. Like, philosophically, not literally, materially, tangibly, physically, just emotionally. They supported terrorists. Now, I don't know how many Americans Hamas has killed. Maybe the crew can find that. How many Americans has Hamas killed? And how many of them were American on paper, but lived in Israel and like were in the IDF? I would like to know. I can't think of any time Hamas has attacked Americans. Am I missing an event? Has there been a time when Hamas has attacked Americans in America, on American soil? Nearly 24 Americans have been killed in the Israeli-Gaza war. Yeah, but how many of them were in the IDF? I don't think they count. They don't count as American. You can't say this is a terror attack against Americans because Hamas killed Israeli soldiers. Okay. That's the frustration with this type of stuff. Is they'll Hamas will kill an IDF soldier, most of whom served in the Israeli Defense Forces. Am I psychic, or is all of this obvious? 23 American citizens, most of whom served in the Israeli Defense Forces, have been killed in the Israel-Gaza war since October 7th. Yeah, so some Israeli signs up for the army, is deployed to a battlefield. Yeah, 21 of them. So 23 have been killed. 21 of them were serving the IDF. All right, so not Americans. I'm going to say they're not Americans. When you're in the army of I know what your citizenship papers say. I get that you can have an American passport, but seems to me like when you join the army of a different nation, it's kind of silly to call you a member of America. Kind of silly to call you an American, but that's a very convenient talking point, I guess. So 23 Americans have died. 21 of them were IDF members. Well, what were the other two hostages that were also IDF members? So I asked this question because I can point to things like the USS Liberty as to an example of a time when Israel directly killed American citizens, American military men, an actual terrorist attack on America by Israel. So I just want to be clear, because when you're saying that a person can be arrested and deported for, quote, glorifying and supporting terrorists who kill Americans, I'd like to know who the terrorists are and whether they're actually killing Americans, or whether this is in fact being done on behalf of a country who itself has killed far more Americans than Hamas ever has, and who now acts like the terror of the world, carrying out a genocide in full view of everybody. Do we not see a slippery slope when the justification for arresting and deporting somebody is glorifying and supporting, in other words, ideas, thoughts, their thought crimes?
I have been so hot and heavy on the news the last few weeks that I have not come up. Mostly yesterday, I didn't plug one time the whole show because I was just so focused and pissed off about what's going on, because we're winning, but the fight is so dangerous. This is the most intense part right now. And so please go to thealexshowstore.com. We have the Great Atomic Defense, the strongest, greatest, most concentrated of all the known herbs and compounds to boost your immune system. Everybody should be on it, especially this time of year. The limited edition Trump 2024 Battle for the Republic coin. On one side, on the other side, the commemorative inauguration. There's a limited amount of those. About, as of this morning, 1/4 of them are gone. There'll be no more made after that. This funds the operation. So I want to thank all of you that have supported. I'll encourage those that haven't gone to theolivesshowstore.com to take action now. The supplements are the best you're going to find anywhere. Become a VIP member for $30 a month. Cancel any time. Get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special sales, special discounts, special offers, and products only to members. Theolivesshowstore.com.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver. Because gold went over $3,000 an ounce, it's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level. Where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3900, kpm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate CMOS has been by far and away our best-selling product on the AlexJonesStore.com when we launched it some months ago. Now, we've had a hard time keeping the gummies in stock, so we formulated the capsules while we wait on more gummies to come in. Now, Irish CMOS is something that's known to be incredible for your body because of the natural iodine that exists in it. It's not just any iodine. It's also abundantly bioavailable. Now, if you don't know, iodine is incredible for your health and supports your body's ability to detoxify itself. Check out Ultimate CMOS capsules right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Not only are you fighting for your health, your immunity, and your body's ability to detoxify itself, but you're fighting for humanity as well by keeping Alex Jones on the air, InfoWars on the air, and this crew operating to broadcast the truth worldwide wherever it is being censored, just like your body is under relentless assault and needs Ultimate CMOS capsules in order to fight off all the toxins that you're met with, so is InfoWars under assault and needs the audience. So go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and subscribe for Ultimate CMOS capsules every month.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great T-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at thealexjonesstore.com, funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We
fired our guns. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
There wasn't as many as there was a while ago.
This is The American Journal. We'll get back to that footage of the Tufts University student who apparently has been arrested and is being deported for the crime of writing an op-ed about Israel. That's the country we live in now. I'm sad to see a lot of my fellow right-wingers going along with it. Like they can't see where it goes, even though the trajectory is obvious. It's fine. It's fine. It's just Jewish fascism. We don't need to worry about it that much. It's just Jewish fascism. It's okay, we live in a theocracy as long as it's Jewish, I guess. It's fine if our government behaves like a fascist government, as long as it's doing it on behalf of a different government. Crazy. Totally crazy. But that's where we are. We'll get back into that in just a minute. Meanwhile, top MS-13 leader arrested in Virginia. U.S. authorities have captured the top MS-13, captured the MS-13 top leader for the U.S. East Coast. The FBI announced on Thursday officials captured the 24-year-old suspect in Woodbridge, Virginia, just south of Washington. D.C. authorities have yet to release the suspect's name, but they say he's one of the top three leaders of the MS-13 gang in the U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel watched the arrest unfold from a nearby tactical operations center. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche and senior DOJ official Emil Bove were also present. Quote, they executed a clean, safe operation with the bad guys in custody, and thanks to the FBI, we got one of the worst of MS-13 off the streets this morning. Virginia and this country is a lot safer today, Bondi told Fox News following the arrest. The operation included the FBI joined by Prince William County Police Department, ATF, ICE, and the Virginia State Police. And again, it's to me, it's just kind of shocking that there's a leader of MS-13 in Virginia in the first place. But that's where our country's going, right? I mean, you import enough the third world, you become the third world. In places like Virginia, which to me inspires images of Monticello and Virginia's for lovers and like valleys of trees changing color. A really beautiful American, classic Americana imagery now just has the infestation of foreign criminal gangs. Like a beautiful old Victorian house infested with ghouls. It's pretty annoying, actually, that we have to deal with any of this. And it makes that much more difficult to do anything. Let's go now to clip number three. This is Pam Bondi talking about the arrests in Virginia of hundreds of foreign criminals. Let's watch.
What I want to do, I want to have other governors, other law enforcement officers come here to Virginia and see this amazing task force, Governor, that is led by our agencies and Governor Youngkin, and what's happening here in Virginia. Arrests have increased 468%. From the same period last year. We didn't need new laws, as President Trump always said. We needed a new president. And we have great leadership standing behind him to fight to keep America safe and make America safe again. We will keep your community safe, and we will continue to do that.
So very good to see. And then Kristi Noem, and of course, the MS-13 gang is actually of El Salvadorian origin, and it's El Salvador that is handling our deportations now because El Salvador actually cleaned up its gang problem through concerted executive action, but also by putting everybody in its government under investigation. Do y'all remember the video of Nayib Bukele sitting down with his entire cabinet and announcing to them, you are all under investigation for corruption? That is the type of action that we need here. I mean, honestly, if Bukele could run for president in America, I would vote for him. 100%. And so we're sending MS-13 members and Trinidad Aragua members to El Salvador to get the Bukele treatment. This, of course, is the subject of the stay by Judge Boasberg, who demanded that the flights be returned. That stay has now been upheld by an appeals court. We'll see what the Supreme Court has to say about it. But I don't like it. I don't like how they're invoking the Alien Enemies Act, because I don't want it turned on me. I'm very much an enemy of this government. So I guess personally for me, I'd rather not be sent to a prison in El Salvador without due process. And I really don't get why. It's pretty standard practice that I have, that I talk about on the show constantly, if the reason that they're giving for doing something isn't legitimate, then you have to figure out the other reason. So Trump can round these people up. He can deport these people. He can arrest them. He can deport them. He can put them on planes. I mean, it seems reasonable to me that if Joe Biden can fly them into the country, we can fly them out. I don't think you need to invoke the Enemy Alien Act to do this. So why are they? Why are they setting the precedent for using wartime military police powers on American soil? Is the problem, like, is it necessary? Is the problem that bad that they have to do this? They have no other choice? Or is this a choice they're making on purpose for some ulterior motive? Because I don't get why this would be necessary. And maybe all of this is just to pave the way for these same types of powers being used against American citizens. I don't get why they have to use these rules. And it's like, okay, then the judge intervenes. And then everybody on the right wing is like, oh, these Clinton judges, they're just biased, or these Obama judges, they're biased. And they are, obviously. And they definitely are. But, like, that all plays into it. But are they going to get the right wing to be the ones to go, yeah, well, the executive branch has the ability to arrest and imprison and disappear anybody? Doesn't matter if they're illegal. Yeah, lawyer says he was disappeared. A gay Venezuelan makeup artist among hundreds deported without due process. I did think this one's funny because they say he was falsely accused of gang affiliations. I don't know if he was, though. I think most of this is predicated on the fact that he was gay. And they're like, but he's gay. And it's like, you can still be a gang member and a drug dealer if you're gay. It's not actually means he's innocent. And look, like I've said since the beginning, it's different if you're illegal. To me, it is different if you're illegal. If you're in this country without permission, I really don't care how they treat you, to be honest with you. You're like a fugitive. You're an invader. And sort of anything is on the table in terms of getting you out. Now, occasionally, I can understand that a mistake would happen. Somebody gets arrested who is here legally and is maybe mistreated. And it's kind of like, well, mistakes will happen. It wasn't on purpose and they'll be fine at the end of the day. But what they're doing now is arresting and deporting people who are here legally, who have our full permission to be here, who have not committed or been charged with a crime, have been here in some cases for decades. With permission, I remind you, again, you know, there's these stories of like, this couple came to California 35 years ago, raised kids here, and now they're being deported. It's like, so for 35 years, they never bothered to even apply to be citizens. Now, it's not an excuse. It's not like, well, they got away with it for 35 years, so now they get to stay. Like, no, America's not, doesn't have squatters' rights. Doesn't matter how long you've been here. All that means to me is you've had 35 years to try to get legal status, and you haven't. So if you're illegal, you're illegal, you're not allowed here, you know you're not allowed here, you have no excuse. But if they can do it, people who are here legally, people who have been here their whole lives, legally, as lawful permanent residents, as green card holders, people who have done it the right way, why could they not do this to American citizens? And what does our citizenship grant us if, you know, green card holders and lawful residents are being subjected to this? I feel like this is just the way they do it, right? It's the way it always gets done. And I'm just seeing a rehash of the Patriot Act, honestly. I'm just seeing a rehash of the Patriot Act where they create the conditions where they get to label a bunch of people terrorists. And then they use that label to get the Americans, the conservatives, people who understand the Constitution and appreciate the Bill of Rights and support the founding principles. It's those people that they hijack and get to pass things like the Patriot Act to just utterly eviscerate all of our rights under the assumption and just like understanding that it's never going to be used against American citizens. But of course it's going to be used. Of course it's going to be used against American citizens. There's no reason why it wouldn't be used against American citizens. So I don't know how people are going along with this. I really don't. It's very strange. So again, did they need to use the Alien Enemies Act to get this MS-13 guy? No? Okay, then why is it being used in other cases? And if it's a wartime provision for enemy agents of a country that we are at war with, what country are we at war with that gives them this right? Are we at war with Turkey because we just arrested a Turkish citizen? Are we at war with Korea because we just arrested a Korean national? And if not, then are these wartime provisions being used in peacetime, not against enemy combatants, but against lawful residents in this country? In which case, can you not see where this goes? Can you not see where this goes inevitably? I mean, I don't know. I'm just genuinely shocked that people aren't horrified by what's happening these days. And literally the only reason people say is they're just like, shouldn't have been a terrorist. Or just like, I don't care, foreigner, get out. And it's like, do you not see how they are so clearly hijacking your frustration that they created with the situation that they established? They flood your country with foreigners. They start a giant war in the Middle East. They carry out a genocide. The foreigners in your country that they brought start protesting. They say these are terrorists and we have to get them out. And because of the situation they created by flooding your country with foreigners, they got you so mad and desperate for just some action somehow. Now you're willing to go along with them arresting and deporting people for wrongthink. And you're paving that way for them. I genuinely don't. When you can read things like, this is a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson answering to ABC News why a Tufts University PhD student was arrested for deportation, why she had her lawful green card residency card revoked. And again, I mean, just these people. My God, they're so stupid. It's like, maybe I need to bring up some of the comments to this, but they're all basically the same. It's all just like, they're a foreigner, they need to get out. It's like, okay, you understand that the people in power are not going after any foreigner. The same people that are arresting this Turkish student for writing an op-ed that was anti-Israel are the same ones advocating for tens of millions of H-1B visas a year to take the top engineering spots from Americans and give them to Indians. These aren't your friends. They aren't doing this because they're foreigners. They're hijacking your desperation to get you to go along with a suicidal policy that's intended in the future to justify military actions against American citizens for opposing Israel. That's all that's happening here. And I bet they'd go along with that too. I bet they'd go along with that too. You gotta be principled in this stuff. It just reminds me of what I was saying the other day, where like I feel like the American public is, they're just like toddlers in the way that they're so easily tricked. And we don't like to think of ourselves like that, but like clearly the majority of Americans are like toddler level understanding of what's going on. In the sense that like you're trying to get your kid to do something, they're not doing it, you're yelling at them, you're trying to get them to do it, trying to reason with them, nothing gets through. And then you go, actually, it's a game. Actually, we're going to race, right? Put your shoes on. Put your shoes on. Please, put your, we got to go. Please, just put your shoes on. Sit down. Put your shoes on. Nothing, 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 right? And then it's like, oh, I bet I can put my shoes on faster than you. And they're like, no. And they're just like, go and put their shoes on. And it's like, hey, because they're three. Because they're 4 years old. You can trick them like that, right? You think they'd grow out of it. You think at a certain point, when you go, I'll race you to put your shoes on, they go, yeah, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing here. You just want me to put my shoes on. And you think if you frame it as a game, I'm going to not understand what you're doing. Nice try, Dad. Right? At a certain point, children rise to that level. The American public at large doesn't seem to have that ability. We're all falling for the who can put their shoes on the fastest game. Hey, we want to arrest people for wrongthink. Hell no. This is America. I don't think so. Not going to happen. Okay, what if I call them terrorists? Well, get them. Arrest them now. Destroy them. It's like, are you a child? Are you a toddler? Can you not see what they're doing? Can you not see how obvious this is? They can't just outright arrest people for thought crime in this country yet, right? But they're getting there. And you're helping them if you're going along with us. So they have to find ways to chip away at it. They have to find ways to expand the definition of terrorist, the definition of supporting terrorism. Does it mean monetary support? Well, it can mean spiritual support. It means they posted about them positively online. Well, we can't just say that we're censoring people, so let's come up with all these definitions of disinformation and misinformation. And our side is going along with it, and it really is pathetic. So again, a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said that the reason this person was arrested was that DHS and ICE investigations, not looking into illegal immigrants, by the way, this person wasn't illegal, she didn't cross the border. We had tens of millions of people cross the border in the last 5 years. Tens of millions of people came across our border in the last 5 years, almost all of which we have their phone numbers. We gave them a ride to where they ended up. We know where they are. Can we take care of that first? Maybe this can be my offer of, agreement here. I'll accept arresting college students for being anti-Israel, deporting lawful residents, despite the fact they didn't commit any crimes, because they aren't drooling leaf philo-Semitic. But on the condition that we get rid of all of the millions of people that flooded here illegally first. Can we do that? Can we agree on that? Because these people, these investigations going on, ICE is carrying out an investigation, Department of Homeland Security is carrying out an investigation. Who knows how many agents they have on it. During the arrest, you see like seven agents arresting this one woman. All of these people and all of this time and all of these resources are all, somebody said to the thing about the, you know, to the woman getting deported for attending the protest. They're like, it's not a zero-sum game. It's like, no, it is. This is a zero-sum game. They have a finite limit of resources and agents where they can put their attention, where they can put their focus. They're not going after MS-13. Some of them are, obviously, but not anybody who's going after the Turkish medical student. Just insane. So, again, from the DHS, and this isn't me whitewashing it. This isn't me, like, claiming it doesn't matter. I mean, if you have somebody in this country that's like in communication with Hamas and Hamas is giving them orders and they're literally like sending them money or, you know, filing grants with the USAID to get, you know, money that's intended for condoms, but really it's going to be spent on weapons. Like, if you actually have a case, then you can make that case. And I might be there with you. They're not making that case. The official DHS spokesman, when asked about why this arrest and deportation of a lawful student who hadn't committed a crime was happening, their reasoning was that glorifying terrorists is grounds for visa issuance being terminated. They get to define who terrorists are. They get to define what glorifying means. So what are they actually saying? What they're actually saying is that it's illegal to oppose Israel. Like, that's pretty much it. And the video of this girl getting arrested, again, I don't know how somebody can be libertarian or conservative or MAGA or just just genuinely American and not find it a bit chilling when you see a college student walking down the street being confronted by a bunch of masked men and women in all black who haul her away with no warrant, no criminal indictment. Video shows federal agents detain Tufts University PhD student Rumeyza Ozturk. Yeah, papers, please, ma'am. You're not hiding anti-Semites in the attic, are you? Come with us. Get on the train. I'm going to send you to a re-education camp. We will learn to appreciate the chosen people. We will learn about the biblical mandate for Israel to be given to Polish refugees. It gives a whole new meaning to papers, please. Papers, please? It's like, my ID? No. I need to see the paper you wrote about the conflict in the Middle East. You on the right side of that? I don't know how people can't see fascism when it's right there in front of you. I don't know if people think this is somehow being done for the benefit of America. I here she is, taking away six agents, hauling away this woman, who's not even illegal, because she wrote an op-ed that was anti-Israel. They didn't accuse her of protesting, they didn't accuse her of violence, they didn't accuse her of coordinating or materially funding terrorism, they accused her of glorifying it. So I think we may have just seen the first full-fledged thought crime arrest in America.
Now, the one thing I want you to do, if I could ask you to do anything for America and Alex and this network and this crew, the one thing I would ask you to do, go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club. It's $30 a month, but you get $40 in store credit. So if you're going to buy a $35 shirt, you might as well sign up for the VIP Club so that you can get that extra $10 and just get the shirt that you want. That is going to ensure that we can fund this operation, fund the next operation, and ensure that Alex always has a voice. They can try to steal his identity. They can try to steal his business. They can try to steal America. They can try to sacrifice humanity in nuclear genocide. But if you go to thealexjonesstore.com and sign up for Alex Jones VIP Club, they'll never take away our voice. They'll never take away our freedom. They'll never take away free speech, and we can save America together. Please go now and be the reason Alex Jones will always be on the air.
America is waking up to the sad and painful fact that we've been under a multinational, globalist, deep state, intelligence agency, controlled coup for decades in this country. They didn't have full control 30, 40 years ago, but they're really attempting full control now, and that's where we are. And InfoWars has engaged in the best long-term analysis of the enemy operation and predicted the resistance movement would form against it, and the fact that we would have major successes against the enemy, but they would then double, triple, quadruple down. That's where we are now. So it's more important than ever that InfoWars stay on the air. I just want to thank you all for your support and spreading the word. It's more important than ever that we get funding. We try to make it easier for you to fund us by simply going to InfoWarsStore.com and getting great products that enrich you and your family's lives. I want to just encourage you all to not forget that without you, we won't be here. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com today, and I thank you.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today. The French are stirring the pot and demanding the Statue of Liberty back. A center-left French MEP, Raphael Glucksmann, is throwing a tantrum, claiming America's gone rogue under Trump, siding with tyrants and torching the values that made Lady Liberty a gift worth giving in 1886. Glucksmann says, "We gave it to you as a gift, but apparently you despise it, so it'll be just fine here at home." Of course, the Statue of Lady Liberty has come to represent everything the Trump administration is fighting for, and New York City already lost the Twin Towers. Lady Liberty is a bridge too far.
Video cameras caught trucks arriving at the World Trade Center from about August 23rd until every night until about September 2nd, September 3rd. And the trucks were arriving at about 3 o'clock in the morning when everybody else had left the building, including the janitorial trucks. And the trucks were leaving at 5 a.m. right before the AAA personalities of Wall Street got to work to start their day. Something was brought into that building that would help with the detonation. There may have been work done on the detonation before. It may have been going on for months, but whatever they needed at the very end, they came and brought in that 10-day period. That's what we think happened. The airplane hijackings were a cover for the controlled demolition, which was undertaken by a small group of people, probably just 4 or 5 people. We are never going to know who they are, and it's not worth looking for them. And in August of 2001, I was told to stay out of New York City because the attack was considered imminent. We expected mass casualties and a possible miniature thermonuclear strike, bomb. However, I want to be very clear. The attack was always defined as airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center.
It isn't a symbol of globalism to the majority of Americans, as Glucksmann appears to have twisted its meaning in his tiny Trump derangement syndrome brain. But Glucksmann has raised a nagging question. The Statue of Liberty was designed by French Freemason Auguste Bartholdi and gifted in 1884. Perched atop a star fort, bathed in the glow of the moon and stars, stands the Statue of Liberty, a monument dripping with occult fingerprints. That torch blazing in her hand, as intended by its creator, it's no beacon of freedom to him. It's the flame of forbidden knowledge handed down by Lucifer himself to keep his cult alive and kicking. Her left foot shackled tight, that wasn't a symbol of slavery to Bartholdi. It was a silent nod to the Creator's wrath, chaining those fallen angels in hell for spawning their freakish human-angel hybrids. From day one, there was a spiritual battle over this new Atlantis. Many powerful families hid in the shadows, intending on America being Satan's playground. And when those European immigrants rolled in, bleary-eyed and hopeful, the first thing staring them down was this towering idol, Lucifer and drag, the whore of Babylon, welcoming them to the land of the devil's colony. The French didn't just hand us a statue, they slipped us a coded relic of their revolutionary occultism. So yeah, Glucksmann, as much as the statue has come to represent precisely what we are now fighting for, its original sentiment was as perverse as the globalist hellhole you currently shoot your mouth from. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
That is the latest from John Bound. You can find it and share that video at InfoWars.com, ban that video, and of course on X. And you can support us in everything that we do by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com, your one-stop shop for supplements, health, and patriotic merchandise. Get the new incredible World War II trench knife. Join the VIP club for additional savings. You get the new limited stock InfoWars coin, 20% off. Got a couple examples right here. They are, of course, that beautiful silver design, simply memento. And it's actually got a picture of Alex. Looks like better than pictures on his social media. Very cool coin. Get yours today.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, everything we broke down over the years has turned out to be dead on. Most of the time when we were a little bit off, it was because things were much worse than we were saying. But in the main, we've been dead on. That's our mission, be the most accurate out there. MSM's mission is to deceive you, lie to you, because they're mercenaries for the globalist. And we're funded by viewers and listeners like you. So we try to bring you products that really work, that you're going to love, so you come back and get them again and again. So many of you are going to be excited to hear that our ultimate turmeric formula is back in stock. The Shilajit is the best quality. The Irish Sea Moss is available as well. You're going to want to reorder it. But for viewers that haven't ever gotten the products and haven't experienced them, you are missing out. If our information is game-changing and one of a kind, imagine what the products are like. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. There's not just great supplements, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, and more at thealexjonesstore.com, powering the American resistance to globalists worldwide and winning.
Dive deep into the stories the mainstream media won't touch. This is the American Journal.
Welcome back, folks. This is the American Journal. I'm going to go to a video now. His friend of the show, pedophile hunter Alex Rosen, was arrested last night. He was arrested last night in Florida, I understand. Brianna Morello was able to reach out and actually get in contact with him, where he told the story how he ended up arrested. Let's go down to clip number one. This is Alex Rosen talking about being arrested while busting a pedophile for the second time. The same guy busted twice, and it's Alex Rosen who gets arrested. Let's watch.
Call connected. This call is being recorded and has a maximum call length of 5 minutes.
Hello? Hello, my friend. What's going on?
Well,
don't say too much, because I don't want you criminally charged with anything. Remember, it's a recorded line.
Right. Okay. So, we caught this pedo for the second time today. We caught him first in October, and he was arrested, but it looks like they did not follow through with charges, unfortunately. So, predictably, he reoffends, as they all do, whether they get charged or not.
Yeah.
And he messaged another one of our decoy accounts in February, and, pretty much identical messages. He sent penis pictures. He says, I've always wanted to date a 13-year-old. And, he asked to meet up multiple times, and today he wasn't trying to meet up, but we went to his job today where he works, and
is it a fast food joint?
It was a Steak and Shake in Branson, Missouri. Uh-huh. And usually the second time around they don't like to talk as much as the first time, I'm sure, as you can imagine. So
yeah.
I think he saw me from behind. I think he saw me from the kitchen at the counter. I was trying to kind of hide my face a little bit, but I kind of stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And I asked the employees, hey, can you bring Joshua over here? And they're like, oh, he's busy. Like, basically, in the nicest way possible to kick rocks.
Yeah.
And so I talked in a very loud voice in the restaurant, and I didn't read through any graphic messages because there were kids in there, but I did read a message talking about how he wanted to date a 13-year-old, and I mentioned in a very loud voice that this place is employing a pedophile, and obviously the owner wasn't too happy about me doing that, understandably, and I just said that I'd wait for the cops to come, and the cops came, and we just told him, like, hey, same guy in October. Obviously, the situation was different because he admitted to a lot of things, including molesting a 12-year-old, which is really, sad they didn't look into, any of it.
Disgusting.
Long story short, after talking to both parties, I guess not the pedophile at that point, they ended up arresting me for disturbing the peace, and they end up, you know, obviously trespassing me from the restaurant. But the good news is I just heard that they did end up taking in the pedo as well. So, you know, it was like a kamikaze mission. You know what I'm saying? I flew my plane into the aircraft here, and we both exploded.
Well, I love you for that. But here's the thing, like, why are they still holding you if it's just gonna, if they already know what the charges are? Do you know why?
Well, so basically the cops decided on scene to press charges, and there's a 24-hour hold. So the prosecuting attorney basically has the, I guess, has the final say in whether charges are pressed within these 24 hours or to let me go without charges pressed, and they have a year to end up pressing charges on it. So, you know, hopefully I just get out as soon as possible, because I don't think that, you know, especially with him being arrested now, I'm a lot more optimistic that I'm probably going to be all right, like, long-term for sure.
Yeah.
And even then, disturbing the peace isn't exactly like a – it's not even that high of a misdemeanor. Like, I'm not – you know, my speeding ticket in Virginia is, like, a worse situation than that. So, yeah. I mean – yeah, but jail fucking sucks, so I definitely learned a lesson today to, not raise my voice around older people.
Yeah, I mean, that's absurd, though. Is this the pedo who's a cross-dresser?
Yes, the cross-dresser, that's correct.
Okay. Okay, and anything else? Like, what can I do for you right now?
Well, you know, I would, put out to your large audience that I am in jail, but also the pedo is in jail. So, you know, give Rant and PD props for being hard asses to everybody, which, you know, I'd rather that happen than, you know, him not be in jail. So it's not the worst case scenario. But yeah, I mean, I don't think any of your audience is necessarily calling the jail, but a lot of mine is, and they're, you know, giving shit to the COs for no reason. Cause, you know, COs are very nice, and obviously they're the ones charging people. So,
All right. I'm going to reach out to a couple people, the state AG as well, just to make sure to get you out as quick as possible, see if someone responds. But if you need anything, you have my number. Call me.
Okay. I'll probably call you sometime tonight and just see what's up.
Cool. All right. I'll be around.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. That's going to hang up on us soon.
All right. Yep.
Yeah. Three Alex Rosen, Brianna Morello, absolutely killing it. I'm loving these Studio Ghibli meme recreations. Brianna Morello, seriously, just superstar in the sector, and staying on top of this. Hopefully we'll see Alex Rosen out again, but it's troubling and telling, the fact that he can arrest somebody, or he can help, you know, participate in the arrest of somebody caught chatting up 13-year-olds. They get let out, and of course just do it again immediately. Pretty troubling stuff. And I want to go to a few videos here. As I promised earlier, and I don't know if I have a particular, you know, thing to relate this to today. More of just a overall sense of shock that I felt when I'm watching this show from the UK. From the early 80s. I think it must be from the early 80s. Crew, can look up the show Yes Minister. And I'm dropping the videos in right now. Whenever we pull them in, I'll go to them. Because it must be the early 80s or late 70s. It's long enough ago, and this is the first thing I noticed. I didn't actually grab this clip, but there are scenes. It must be the late 70s when this is happening. When they're talking about smoking. 1980? Okay. So in 1980, there were still moments when, sequel, Yes, Prime Minister, maybe that's what I'm talking about, Yes, Prime Minister, where they're talking about smoking, and the characters keep going, there's been no conclusive scientific study that's shown smoking is unhealthy. There's no scientific study that showed that conclusively. Of course, the other character's like, well, it's because you've never done the study. And they're like, yes, well, it still doesn't exist. And it's that to me was amazing, because, like, how many things in our life are like that? There is no conclusive study to show autism is caused by vaccines. Well, yeah, but there hasn't been one done. It's amazing to think that as early as 1980s, there were still people out there that were trying to claim that smoking didn't cause cancer. because the science hadn't been done. There's just stuff like that where I'm like, man, that's weirdly pertinent. That's weirdly, it's like it's satirizing the modern world. It's about smoking 50 years ago, and we can recognize it as absurd now because it would be absurd for anybody today to say, well, there's no proof smoking causes cancer. There's no proof smoking lowers life expectancy. So it just goes to show the, you know, control of the scientific community and the way that industries weaponize it. But I'm watching this episode yesterday. I think it was the sixth episode of the first season. And there were some hilarious but bizarre crossovers from the modern world to the early 80s. And it's another example of just like, hey, I'm not looking for it, but Israel is everywhere. I know what you're thinking. I'm talking about a sitcom from the UK in the 80s. Surely I can't be relating this to Israel somehow, but it wasn't me. Trust me, they did it. So the first clip. So the story is basically this. You have a new prime minister in the UK. He's very vain. He's very kind of stupid. And he is basically just controlled by the civil service, the permanent deep state of the UK. And the whole, like all of the drama in the episodes is about how they manipulate the prime minister. And they're constantly manipulating him, constantly keeping information from him, feeding him certain information, playing to his ego to get what they want. And I seriously think this would be, if Daily Wire wasn't going down in flames, this would be the thing that they should produce. If InfoWars can get out from under the bankruptcy, I think it'd be well worth it to dedicate the time and energy to creating a modern remake of Yes, Minister. Yes, Mr. President, it could be called. And you'll see why when I show you these clips. We'll start with the first one that says YM Israel. So, again, just sort of a funny, but a little bit of a twist, too, a little bit of a difference. You know, the 1980s wasn't that long ago. But you'll notice that Britain seems to have reorganized its foreign policy prerogatives. Let's go to the first clip, YM Israel.
Yes, well, the Arabs have put down a motion of the United Nations condemning Israel. Naturally, we'll be voting on the Arab side.
Oh, naturally.
Yeah. But I gather that the what? PM wants us to abstain.
Oh, surely not. Why?
Well, something about the PLO starting at this time, faults on both sides, the usual sentimental nonsense. Mm. Sucking up to the Americans as always. That as far as foreign affairs are concerned, his job is to confine himself to the hospitality and ceremonial room.
I'll do my best. But you know what happens when politicians get into number 10? They want to take their place on the world stage.
People on stages are called actors. All they're required to do is look plausible, stay sober, and say the lines they're given in the right way.
Some of them try to make up their own lines.
They don't last long.
Yes, they don't last long, and they try to bring their own. So, like, the whole point of this show, and a part of it, I think, is, like, deep subversion, where it's, like, presenting the deep state as good, even though they're all kind of goofy. But that just gives you a little taste of, like, prime ministers, they can't interfere with our greater designs. They're just worried about popularity. They need to worry about what's happening by Friday, not centuries from now. That's the point in this next clip as well. 3:27, let's watch.
Anything else? Yes, I gather we're proposing to vote against Israel in the UN tonight.
Of course.
Why?
They bombed the PLO.
Well, the PLO bombed Israel.
Yes, but the Israelis dropped more bombs than the PLO. No, they didn't.
Well, anyway, it seems to be the faults on both sides.
Well, not according to my advice.
Well, the Americans are worried about it. They want us to abstain tonight.
Oh, I don't think we could do that.
Why not? Well, the Foreign Office wouldn't wear it. Are they here to follow our instructions, or are we here to follow them?
Now, don't be silly.
You know, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same. Are you exhausted yet? Are you exhausted yet? The conversation about who's at fault between Israel and Palestine, the conversation has been going on for 55 years. The exact same conversation over and over. Well, they started it. Well, they dropped more bombs. Well, no, they didn't. It's just like, oh, my God. How long is this conflict going to be central in the Western democracies? And, of course, the important question there, do we tell them what to do or do they tell us? Well, that's a good question. And actually, this show, again, I think this would just be a brilliant thing to remake with the American deep state. Actually explaining to other deep state members why it's so important that they pull the wool over the eyes of politicians. This next clip is a bit longer, and they actually get into the reasoning. And again, I just think it's fascinating that 50 years ago they were writing this, or 35, 40 years ago they were writing this, and how so little has changed, and how applicable it all still is. Let's go to the next clip.
Father of St. George's Island is getting to be rather a bore.
Of course, we made the real mistake 20 years ago when we gave them their independence.
Don't you think I was right? Wind of change and all that?
Yes, but not the way we did it. We should have partitioned the island.
Oh, you mean like we did in India and Cyprus and Palestine and Ireland?
Yes, that was our invariable practice when we gave independence to the colonies. It always worked.
Didn't partition always lead to civil war? It did in India and Cyprus and Palestine and Ireland.
Yes, but it kept them busy. Instead of fighting other people, they confined themselves to fighting each other.
Yes, they're rather good there. Instead of just having a policy about them.
I think these are the conversations that happen. I don't think this is even, like, entertainment. I think this is just a hidden camera in 10 Downing Street. We should have partitioned the colony, and literally pointing out that of all the colonies that got freedom from the UK, those that were partitioned ended up going to war, basically being in civil war for the next several decades. And the UK is like, yeah, that's what we should have done with all of them. That was very convenient for us. We didn't have to have a policy about them. We didn't have to worry about them. We just split the country in half and have it go to war with itself. Very convenient. It's like you got two options. You either you go the Alex Jones style of just raging and just being like, they split the population against each other. They have each other fight each other so they can keep going and doing what they want without. And it's like it's the exact same argument as, yeah, we just have the two of them fight each other. Then we get to continue with business as usual. And it's like, I think both of these equally incisive, equally as enlightening when it comes to the decisions being made. From on high. Now, here's the longer clip where they, break down the reasoning as to exactly why politicians can't be trusted with things like politics. Let's watch.
St. George's.
What now?
Well, the PM seems to be completely in the dark.
Good. Excellent. Anything else?
Well, I wondered if there was anything he doesn't know.
Well, I hardly know where to begin, Bernard.
No, I mean anything important.
Well, he has the Foreign Secretary to tell him.
Yes, I know, Sir Richard. He seems to think the Foreign Secretary doesn't know the whole story either.
I should hope not. Are you implying that the Prime Minister ought to know what's happening?
Well, he is the Prime Minister.
Yes, Bernard, but it's simply too dangerous to let politicians become involved with diplomacy. Diplomacy is about surviving until the next century. Politics is about surviving until Friday afternoon. 157 independent countries in the world. We've dealt with them for years. There's hardly an MP who knows anything about any of them. Show them a map of the world. Most of them have a job finding the Isle of Wight.
Surely politicians can't be that ignorant.
Very well, sit down, Bernard. Where is the Upper Volta?
What's the capital of Chad?
What language do they speak in Mali?
Who's the president of Peru?
What is the national religion of Cameroon?
Bernard?
Huh?
You should stand for Parliament.
No, what I mean is, if it's a democracy, shouldn't people sort of discuss things a bit?
Oh, of course, full discussion.
And shouldn't they have the facts?
Of course not. They don't want them. Facts complicate things. All the
what the press, the people and their elected leaders want to know is who are the goodies and who are the baddies.
The problem is that the interests of Britain nearly always involve doing deals with people that the public think are the baddies.
And not helping the goodies occasionally when it doesn't help us.
So we avoid discussion of foreign affairs. Or rather, we keep all discussion inside the Foreign Office. Then we produce one policy for the Foreign Secretary, which represents our considered view. And he can act upon it.
No options?
None.
No alternatives?
None.
What if he's not satisfied?
Well, if pressed, we look at it again.
And come up with a different view?
Of course not. We come up with the same view.
But what if he demands options?
Well, it's obvious, Bernard. The Foreign Office will happily present him with three options, two of which are, on close inspection, exactly the same.
And plus a third, which is totally unacceptable.
Like bombing Warsaw or invading France.
Better still, we occasionally encourage the Foreign Secretary to produce his own policy, and then we tell him that it will inevitably lead to World War III, perhaps within 48 hours.
I see. I'm sorry to appear stupid, but...
Oh, perish the thought, Bernard.
But in my experience, ministers are somewhat concerned about the effect of policy on domestic political opinion. Now, our system doesn't seem to allow for that.
Of course not. We take the global view. We ask what's best for the world.
Well, most ministers would rather you asked, what's the Daily Mail leader going to say?
Oh, Bernard, we can't have foreign policy made by jobbos like Fleet Street editors or backbench MPs.
Or cabinet ministers.
Or cabinet ministers. We take the right decisions and let them sort out the politics later.
Again, I don't have anything specific to relate this to, but I don't know if I've ever seen a better or more accurate portrayal of the actual thought processes of the deep state ever. Just the way they can so casually disregard the democracy that they simultaneously uphold as sacred. Disturbing. BBC quietly removes Yes Minister episode because it's problematic to mention Israel. Yeah. Things are a little different then. The whole episode's interesting. It's all about Israel and it's Israel. It was probably that episode that was removed. Because the basically the Israeli ambassador is like feeding information to the prime minister to get him to make decisions. It's all about East Yemen staging a communist revolution. You know, this is in the height of the Cold War. So there's the extra layer of the Soviets infiltrating everything. Which, hey, things haven't changed, have they? Things really haven't changed, have they? Israel still at war, communists still infiltrating, the deep state still making decisions as what's best for the globe, not what's best for America or Britain or any other country where they're supposed to have their priorities. And again, I guess this is just my call to action. Who wants to make a new TV show? Who wants to make an American version of Yes Minister called Yes President, where you basically have exactly the same plots and the same dialogue from the UK in the 1970s because things are exactly the same? And I feel like if nothing else, it should at least make you realize kind of like what Trump is up against, honestly, because it's exactly the same thing here and you see exactly how it's justified, right? Well, politicians are just trying to be popular. We're trying to figure out what's best for the globe. And they don't need to know the answer to all of these things. That's what we're here. It's actually a burden on us that we have to do all of this work for them. And they get to go play their popularity contest and we get to decide the course and direction of history. And that it's just still that exact thing. And again, just that line is what made me want to grab these clips. When he says, we take a more global view. We're more concerned about what's best for the globe. And it's like, how is it that a comedy sitcom from BBC from the early 80s has a better grasp on the way geopolitics operates and the way politics itself operates than modern Americans with practically live stream, permanent 24/7 access to every politician? So it's just, when we are involved in politics, and Donald Trump is the one like destroying that structure, which is why we support him. Before that, we aren't fighting against politicians. We're fighting against those deep state controllers that you saw there.
Quite frankly, I didn't develop Optimal Human when Bigley came on as a big sponsor. And I told them the supplements I wanted from the companies I wanted. They went out and did what I wanted. People love them, and they're incredible. The turmeric, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it. But they'd had this out for years, and I thought, my green caps are great. And, you know, this other company I use is great because, you know, green superfoods are amazing. And then I finally took it, and Harrison Smith took it, and I was like, my God. And by then, we've been selling it 4 or 5 months, and it was already a top seller. The problem is there's so many ingredients, and it's so hard to source, and it's so clean, high standards, that it's sold out most of the time. We finally got a decent shipment of it in, but we never offered it for subscription because we just couldn't keep it. When you subscribe at thealexshowstore.com, and then they keep it back for you so it never sells out. So go to thealexshowstore.com and get your Optimal Human and so many other incredible products today. Check out all the great Patriot apparel. Make your life more healthy and enrich, and help keep us on the air as we take on the deep state at point blank range and win. I have been so hot and heavy on the news the last few weeks that I have not come up. Most of me yesterday, I didn't plug one time the whole show. I was just so focused and pissed off about what's going on, because we're winning, but the fight is so dangerous. This is the most intense part right now. And so please go to thealexshowstore.com. We have the great atomic defense, the strongest, greatest, you know, concentrated of all the known herbs and compounds to boost your immune system. Everybody should be on, especially this time of year, with the limited edition Trump 2024 Battle for the Republic coin. On one side, on the other side, the commemorative inauguration. There's a limited amount of those. About as of this morning, 1/4 of them are gone. There'll be no more made after that. This funds the operation. So I want to thank all of you that have supported. I'll encourage those that haven't gone to thealexshowstore.com to take action now. The supplements are the best you're going to find anywhere. Become a VIP member for $30 a month. Cancel any time. Get $40 to spend on the store each month. Special sales, special discounts, special offers, and products only to members. Thealexshowstore.com.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver, because gold went over $3,000 an ounce. It's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level, where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3000, kepm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars is back on the air. The judge is having emergency hearings. Looks like their fraudulent sale won't go through. But regardless, I'm suing the daylights out of the Democratic Party and the big national gun control group that's actually behind the Onion and has now admitted it in court. So, we also have backup studios, the Alex Jones Network. Whatever they do, we're staying on air to make sure Trump gets into office and to back him and his agenda to stop World War III, secure the borders, and more. But we can't do it without your support. So there are all these new, amazing, incredible designs up on thealexjonesstore.com. It has nothing to do with InfoWars. Not owned by me, so they can never get that. That's how we stay on the air, even if they're successful in shutting us down. If you go to thealexjonesstore.com and you get great supplements, t-shirts, limited edition collectible fundraiser posters, and more, you will keep me on the air regardless of the Alex Jones Network. Please go to the site now, thealexjonesstore.com, and keep us on air. They're amazing products. Thank you so much for taking action. You are the resistance.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. We'll be joined in the next hour by Raw Egg Nationalist. We're talking a lot about what he's in town for. And in fact, I think on that note, because I believe he's in town for a conference called NatalCon. It's all about increasing the birth rate and actually celebrating a pro-life mindset.
where you encourage people to have kids and ideally create the economic circumstances for which having children is a possibility. So I want to go to a video now of some people in Colorado, clip number 11, making a sort of novel argument in favor of abortion. I've heard lots of different arguments in favor of abortion. This one might be the most sickening yet. Let's go down to clip number 11.
That savings comes from the averted births that will not occur because abortions happened instead. So a birth is more expensive than an abortion. So the savings comes in Medicaid births that will not occur. This bill will actually decrease costs for our healthcare policy and financing department, our Medicaid expenditures in both this year and out years, as the savings from averted births outweigh the cost of covering reproductive health care for all Coloradans. This bill requires all abortion services to be state funded. The bill requires an increase to general fund of $1.5 million to cover the cost for care. But again, a reminder that ultimately the state will see a cost savings. And ultimately, it is truly an honor to be here carrying this bill alongside Rep. Garcia, and I ask for your support of Senate Bill 183.
That's right, folks. Killing a baby is actually cheaper than raising one. This argument brought to you by hell itself and Satan's mind. Cheaper to, and of course, this reminds you of the headline from CBC, that's the Canadian version of BBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company. Medically assisted deaths could save millions in healthcare spending. What type of mind comes up with this type of argument? You know what's cheaper than keeping people alive? Killing them. Yeah, great point. I really would like to see the person make this argument in the first place. I mean, I guess we just did. But the way it's phrased is maybe a little bit, you know, disguising the reality. If I come to you and say, I have an idea of how we could save $138 million in health care. I'm like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Well, what do you got for us? I'm like, why don't we just kill the sick people? Why don't we just kill the people that are costing us money and then we can save the money? We can fund more transgender operations. We can fund, excavations of churches where there aren't any bodies. We can spend the billions upon billions of dollars on other things that are make everything worse. We can save that money with the simple act of murder. It's so convenient. Why didn't we think of this before? People cost money. There were less people. That cost less money. I'd never thought of it that way. All of you parents out there feel pretty stupid, huh? You're spending money on books and clothes and shoes, toys, doctor's visits. Do you know that you can actually cover all of those costs, save all of that money by simply tearing the child apart with metal tongs? And then you can sell the body and actually make money. We actually have a way of taking the miracle of childbirth from being a negative in the expense columns to being a positive. Not only will you save money by murdering your children, you can butcher the children and sell them like meat and make money through abortion. So as a fiscally responsible conservative, I say slaughter the children. We're just gonna kill them. It's so simple. It's so easy. It's so cheap. Murder. The solution to all of your budget woes. Isn't that convenient? Now, they actually made that argument. They are legitimately making the argument that preserving life is more expensive than ending it. So therefore, we should end it. At the end of life or the beginning, those are where the savings really come in. If you kill something before it even has a chance to draw breath, then you're saving a lifetime of expenses by murdering the baby. And then at the end of life, it takes a lot of money to keep people alive for a couple extra years. Inject them with a little bit of arsenic, and that's cheap. I mean, that's a 50-cent injection. Hell, how much does a bullet cost? Right? I mean, if you really want to save a bunch of money, you could let tons of people starve to death. That's even better. We are in the modest proposal reality.
But why do they even have to be sick? Like, if they're just a drain on the economy, let's eliminate them.
That's what I'm saying. Cut off the welfare, cut off their access to funds, let them starve to death and eat each other. Total savings, 100% recouping of costs. It's incredible. Like, do you have any idea how much money we could save by killing the Untermensch? Do you have any idea the cost savings that could be accrued? And I mean, you could take this to the extreme. How much money could we save if no babies were ever born again? That's where the real savings kick in. What if we killed every baby? Can you imagine the cost savings that we could accrue? We don't have to pay doctors to deliver babies. We don't have to pay for toys or I mean, there's entire industry supported by the existence of babies. And I mean, look, frankly, babies, they're just a capitalistic trick. Capitalism tricked us into thinking that babies are good. That's what I've learned from the YouTubers that I watch. They told me that it's actually before capitalism, humans didn't make babies. We didn't have that unnatural drive. It was capitalism that tricked people into wanting babies. Why? Because what happens when you have a baby? You got to buy them clothes. They don't stay that small. They grow, and within a couple months, you're having to buy new clothes. That means you're having to buy new products. Get it? Consumerism. You have to be a constant consumer, constantly buying new products. As your babies grow, you have to buy them a whole sorts of toys, and they grow out of those toys. You got to buy all new. It's a capitalist trick, folks. It's a trick of capitalism to keep you constantly purchasing things for your baby as it grows, your child as it grows, the healthcare, the food spending. It's a trick to get you to buy things. You can save money and be a good communist by eliminating childhood, and making babies. Frankly, I think we should be putting sterilization agents in our pesticides so that anybody that eats crops that we grow have a little bit of a diminished chance of getting pregnant. I think we can lower fertility across the board through an infusion of microplastics and hormone-altering, estrogen-mimicking pesticides. Do you have any idea how much money we could save? Do you have any idea? Now, you know, your son might be a little upset when you trick him into getting a vasectomy. You just have to let him know I'm doing it for your own good. If you castrate your son or sterilize your daughter, you know, they might find that as some sort of imposition on their freedom, right? Some sort of vile act of mutilation. So you have to explain to them how much money they're going to save. Okay? Because that's all that matters at the end of the day. So again, whether it's the beginning of life and aborting the baby, or the end of life and murdering the old people, the fact is that in the modern world, the incredibly difficult economic circumstances that the government has put us in require the government to support the murdering of inconvenient people who are just a drain on our books. I mean, after all, if you can wholesale replace a population with a different population, you can genocide all of Ireland and replace them with Africans and Pakistanis, is that not just sort of an outgrowth and extension of this type of thought? After all, is the economy there to serve the people, or are the people there to serve the economy? The people are there to serve the economy, then replace them all with migrants. The people are there to serve the economy, then their mere existence is a drain on the economy, then they need to be killed for the sake of the economy. Save the planet, kill yourself. Save the economy, kill yourself. Don't fall into that capitalistic trap of fulfilling your biological imperative. know if I've talked about it much on this show. I've tweeted about it a little bit, but there are things that I hear, and it's, I'll be watching some YouTube, I'm like just like cleaning, and I got YouTube playing in the background. It's just some video about like Lord of the Rings or something, I don't know, whatever. It's like a movie commentary. And these YouTubers, they have the funniest things they think are like tricks of capitalism. I heard one person going on, and these aren't like political people, right? This is how deeply saturated our culture is in this type of thinking, where it's people like, you know, the reason Americans eat so much meat is because of an ad campaign in the 1950s. It's like, you think Americans like meat because they were tricked? You think that capitalism tricked them into liking steak? How warped people's minds are. Like, they literally think the most natural, normal things in the world are like a trick to make money. Another person saying, hunting was just a trick. Hunting was just there was an ad campaign in the 50s, again, about hunting. And that's why Americans hunt. They think they're participating in some sort of ancestral pastime. But in reality, nobody hunted for sport before the 1950s when an ad company wanted to sell, you know, guns. It's like, you can only believe these things if you are utterly ignorant of all of human history. Which is convenient because they are. They are utterly, completely ignorant of what life was like before the 1990s. They have absolutely no idea, no curiosity, no interest in it. But they are willing to believe that everybody previously was just being tricked, and we're the only enlightened ones. We understand everything. Nobody in the past understood anything. And that's why history needs to be destroyed, not to trick people into thinking that the past was good or anything. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're making the argument that having children was some sort of capitalistic trick to sell baby toys. And, you know, the reason I'm bringing that up is because, like, even if you could make the, I mean, they did make the argument, we just saw it, as unbelievable as it sounds, they're actually making the argument that childcare, healthcare, delivering a baby is more expensive than killing it, therefore we should have abortion. They actually made that argument. But if you actually look at the economy holistically, a baby is a generator of prosperity. Every baby that's born guarantees like 1,000 jobs, because they do. They need a lot of stuff. They need a lot of care. They need a lot of clothes and food and cribs and strollers and all the sort of stuff that you only need because babies are constantly being born, and they only last, you know, the goods only last a few years. So it's one of those things that's like, okay, if you take this to its logical end, if we actually had, you know, nothing but abortions and no live births, and you did that for the sake of the entire economy would crash and grind to a halt, and there'd be a cascading effect of all of the businesses that are supported by the existence of babies goes away. It's like it's not even an actual argument. It's not even a real argument. But this is the only reason this argument makes any sense at all is because so many people rely wholly on the government. It wouldn't be a concern if people could actually afford the choices that they make. But they can't. They have 12 babies out of wedlock with no job, no support structure. Suddenly the government is on the hook to pay for all of their children. Now we can't afford it. Now the budget's not balancing. Now they're pushing abortion to try to balance the budget. None of that would be an issue if the government had nothing to do with this and these lives. But it's the exact same argument that was made that is made for replacing the entire population of countries because it's better for the economy. So that's really the principal question at the heart of this issue. Do we exist for the economy, or does the economy exist for us? And if we're limiting our births for the sake of the economy, we're destroying our lives for the sake of the economy, then I think maybe we need to get rid of the economy. I don't know how you do that, but we do. Anyway, just sickening. Just sickening, disgusting, horrific mindset of these people in our country. It really is messed up. By the way, since we're on the topic of the UK earlier, I thought this was a joke. I thought this was a parody. But it's not, apparently. Keir Starmer, Prime Minister of England, of the UK, just posted this. Confirmed, ninja swords will be banned by this summer. When we promise action, we take it. Ninja swords will be banned by this summer in the UK. Because when I look at, this is part of why I thought it was a joke. I thought somebody was telling me they were going to ban my samurai swords.
Are there weapons of war?
Apparently they're weapons of war. And it's also hilarious they specified ninja swords. Like, what? So if I have a Roman sword, it's okay. Just ninja swords? Ninja. Okay. So he says, knife crime is at epidemic levels and is ruining lives across Britain. As Prime Minister, I'll crack down on the sale of these lethal weapons once and for all. Because when I look around the UK, when I see the miserable state of abject tyranny, economic collapse, cultural chaos, I can look at the UK and I can find one major glaring problem above all, and that is novelty samurai swords. When I look around the UK and I see their collapsing economy, and I see them readying for World War III with Russia, and I see mobs of Muslims wandering the streets with metal bars beating up every white people they see, while all of the white people are being arrested and thrown into jail for 3 years for posting an article on Facebook, I think I know what solves this problem. I know what can cut this Gordian knot. Although I don't know, can I use that phrase anymore? I don't know. I mean, to use a sword to slice through rope, is that really the type of message we want to be sending to UK kids? So far, because of the endless importation of millions upon millions of culturally incompatible extremists from overseas, because of the knife crime and the terrorist bombings and the attempted bombings, the pressure cooker that was found in a hospital 3 days ago, the UK has identified the overwhelming concerns. It's misogyny on the internet and novelty samurai swords. Couldn't possibly be the influx of millions of violent extremist men. Couldn't possibly be the crackdown and clampdown on free speech, leaving the populace incapable of even understanding, let alone dealing with the problems that they're facing. It must be misogyny because a Netflix cartoon told me so. And samurai swords, because Keir Starmer, pedophile defender, decided that's the big issue. Novelty samurai swords. Yeah, I think the UK needs to revolt. I think we need a revolution there. From banned nunchucks to sausage links, why UK hated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, so for a while, the UK actually had a rule where you couldn't have anything in the title that referenced death. So ninja was blocked because ninjas are assassins. So you couldn't have, like, back in the day in the 80s when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was airing, it was called, like, Teenage Mutant Rumble Turtles or something in the UK because you couldn't have the word ninja. Couldn't have the word assassin. You couldn't have the word. You couldn't have words that referenced, like, professional killers in your title. So, I mean, the UK has been, I don't want to use the word pussified, but I can't think of a better one. for a very long time. We'll talk to Raw Egg Nationalists about this. And hopefully we won't get him arrested in his home country. Maybe I need to cover all this stuff before he gets in studio so they can't show this at his trial for wrongthink. As he's put in prison for a decade for expressing discontent at the just utter absurdity of his home country. By the way, in 9 days, the UK legal system will openly discriminate against white men and be lenient towards ethnic minorities. Labour has officially sanctioned the two-tier justice system. Still can't believe this is happening. Britain is broken. And have you ever seen a more accurate portrayal of a wolf in sheep's clothing? It literally looks like she's wearing sheepskin. But it is some demented-looking Muslim woman wearing the white hair coat. Sometimes the symbol sort of vestigial appearance doesn't really comport with how this works. This is how you take a generation, a nation over in one generation from mirthful moments. The mayor of London is Muslim. The mayor of Birmingham is Muslim. The mayor of Leeds is Muslim. The mayor of Blackburn is Muslim. The mayor of Sheffield, the mayor of Oxford, the mayor of Luton, the mayor of Oldham, Rochdale. All of this was achieved with only 4 million Muslims out of 66 million people in England. Today, there are over 3,000 mosques in England. There are over 130 Sharia courts. There are more than 50 Sharia councils. 78% of Muslim women do not work, receive state support and free accommodation. 63% of Muslims do not work, receive state support and free housing. State-supported Muslim families with an average of 6 to 8 children receive free accommodation. Now, every school in the UK is required to teach lessons about Islam. Did anybody actually vote for this? No, you just didn't stop them from doing it. You just let them call you racist and stop you from doing it. Again, I almost want to show more. Oh, yeah, look at this. There you go, right there. Yeah, that's exactly right. I should have shown more from Yes Minister, because, again, they were dealing with this in the 80s, where they're literally saying, like, we should actually criticize African countries, not just the white ones. And they're like, oh, so you're a racist. So it's just like, okay, the word racist has conquered your country. The word racist has overcome 1,000 years of British rule. A word. A single word without a real meaning has allowed for the subversion and destruction of an empire that once spanned the globe, has something like 3/4 of the world's population under its control. Keir Starmer. It's no more ninja swords. I know what you're thinking. A Muslim just tried to set off a pressure cooker bomb in a hospital, but don't worry. We're going after the sword you can get at the mall. We're going after the blunt blades that nerds wear at Comic-Con. Problem solved. Yeah, I'm sure this will be solved. I'm sure after this, there will be no more terrorist attacks, no more stabbings, no more beheadings of police in the streets, no more stabbing of little girls at dance class. Because finally, the plague of ninja violence in the UK will be over.
Anybody who's halfway informed about health and vitality knows that turmeric is one of the top supernutrients in the world. But concentrated turmeric is what you want. Most turmeric pills are 4%. That's raw. This is the strongest, 95% curcuminoid with a bunch of other concentrated supernutrients like ginger and black pepperdine. And it's finally back in stock. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies at thealexjonesstore.com. Just go see what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says about turmeric. And this stuff is the Godzilla of turmeric. And it funds the InfoWar. And while you're at thealexjonesstore.com, be sure to check out the widest selection anywhere of Patriot 1776 Part 2. Incredible clothing, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies. It's all there, like this baby, the Second American Revolution, at thealexjonesstore.com. And you're funding the tip of the spear in the Second American Revolution when you support us. So I thank and salute you all. Now take action at thealexjonesstore.com.
I talk a lot about the great successes InfoWars has had. I don't think anybody can deny it. And it is because of listeners and viewers supporting us. But when we talk about the crew at InfoWars, people behind the scenes, the researchers, the writers, they really have been the MVPs in this fight. And when you look at Harrison Smith and Owen Schroyer and the hard work they engage in every day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, it's really just incredible. So for myself and the whole InfoWars crew, I thank you for your past support. I only encourage you now to realize that InfoWars cannot stay on air if you do not support us. I know you spread the word. I know you pray for us. And that's wonderful. Keep doing it. But most viewers and listeners never go to InfoWarsStore.com and you never buy great products that enrich and empower your life while at the same time keep us on air. I know that less than 1% of our listeners actually go buy products at InfoWarsStore.com. If just 1% more of you took action and went to InfoWarsStore.com, our funding problems will be over. Please take action now.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
Our conversation is with Mr. Yuri Alexandrovich Bezmianov. He was the son of a high-ranking Soviet Army officer. He had an outstanding career with the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB. He escaped to the West in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean?
Ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him.
Do you believe then that men can become pregnant and have abortions?
Yes. What has this world come to? It's come to a world where drag kids actually exist.
And people do ketamine on a couch.
The next stage is destabilization. The economy.
There are some dire predictions on where the world economy is going.
Foreign relations.
Some of the world's superpowers could be on a collision course.
Defense systems.
The U.S. Army is cutting back its expectations due to, quote, unprecedented recruitment challenges.
The next stage, of course, is crisis.
Folks, we're in a crisis.
After crisis, you have so-called the period of normalization.
When we say getting back to normal, we mean something very different from what we're going through right now.
The demoralization process is basically completed already. I could never believe it when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. This is exactly what the KGB and Marxist-Leninist propaganda wants from Americans. To distract their opinion and attention from real issues of the United States. To have a bunch of duped Americans, then Americans who are healthy, physically fit, and alert to the reality.
What is your ideal political or social structure?
Communist utopia.
That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, try to get into filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the people who AGB wanted very much to recruit. It's all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders. They are instrumental in the process of subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. The psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will join the links of dissenters. The Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. The United States is in the state of war. The initiator of this war is the world communist system.
The only solution is communist revolution. That's why we need communists. That's what we need.
This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Okay, so what do we do? What is your recommendation to the American people?
The immediate thing that comes to my mind is, of course, there must be a very strong national effort to educate people in the spirit of real patriotism, number one. Number two, to explain them the real danger of socialist, communist, whatever, welfare state, big brother government. If people will fail to grasp the impending danger, nothing ever can help United States. You may kiss goodbye to your freedom, including your precious lives. I know Americans don't like to listen to things which are unpleasant. I tried to get the message across. To my horror, nobody wanted even to listen, least of all to believe what I had to say. The time bomb is ticking. With every second, the disaster is coming closer and closer. Unlike myself, you will have nowhere to defect to. United States, wake up.
Unless you've been hiding under a rock, everyone knows that Shilajit is one of the most incredible super nutrients, and they don't even know how it's formed deep under the earth. It's just got incredible amino acids and natural peptides that nothing else has. And what does it do for you? Everything. Your skin, your clarity, your focus. I'm on this stuff. Your wife, your girlfriend will thank you. That's just a little side issue. Shilajit's awesome, but this is the best, purest, strongest Shilajit with a whole bunch of other badass stuff in it. We throw the kitchen sink at you because we want it to work, and it will. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. So get this great t-shirt design and hundreds of others, the biggest selection, at thealexjonesstore.com, funding the Second American Revolution worldwide. God almighty.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, third hour of American Journal is on, and I'm so happy to be joined in studio by the one and only Raw Egg Nationalist. He's the founder and editor of Man's World Magazine and a frequent contributor to InfoWars, amongst other publications. You can find in-depth articles about culture, politics, lifestyle, and fitness by visiting mansworldmag.online, raweggstack.com, and, of course, by following him on X at BabyGravy9, at BabyGravy9. Raw Egg Nationalist, welcome. Welcome, sir.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you. And I was saying earlier in the show, you were doxxed. You were anonymous for a long time. Then you were doxxed. They published your face and name. And what's been the downside to that? Because the upside is here you are in studio in front of the camera getting to talk to us in person, not anonymously. Has there been any downside to this?
I don't actually think there has. It's kind of strange, you know. I spent 4 years thinking, oh, I've got to protect my anonymity. I've got to remain behind this mask. And then the mask was lifted for me at a moment, actually, when I had a lot of popularity. You know, I mean, I had an independent income, for example. You know, I didn't have a normie job, so there wasn't really the possibility of me losing my job. But nevertheless, you know, Britain is we've slid into a kind of sinister, very sinister tyranny. Britain's become a strange, unrecognizable place, actually, even for me. You know, I'm 37, you know, and Britain has changed a huge amount in my lifetime. But nevertheless, no, I was doxxed, and as far as I can see so far, it's been all
right.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be different if you were like a 300-pound greasy basement dwelling dude, right? I think that's what they were expecting, right? They're like, oh, yeah. Right. He talks about fitness, but we'll show. Yeah. And it's like, oh, actually, he's a good looking, you know, fit 37-year-old. He actually is exactly who you'd expect him to be. They must have been disappointed. But that happened. That's happened like a bunch of times with a bunch of different people. They go through all these loops, and I think they're tied in with people in Twitter. I think they have the Twitter back end. Do you have any idea how they got your information, how they unmasked you?
Well, so actually when I was unmasked, there was all sorts of strange stuff going on. So 2 weeks before I was unmasked, I went into my local farm shop. I don't know if you saw about this. I went into my local farm shop, and the owner of the farm shop comes over to me and says, oh, Charlie, you've got to see this. Takes out an email from his pocket from a Business Insider journalist, from one called Catherine Long. And she somehow had found out that I was shopping at this farm shop.
Wow.
She sent this guy. She sent this guy an email saying, look, there's a chap who shops at your farm shop. He buys prodigious quantities of raw eggs and raw milk.
That's how they got you. Yeah. They looked at all the receipts. They're like, who's buying, you know, wholesale levels of eggs as an individual? That's how they got you.
But so this Business Insider journalist sent an email. Now, she's called Catherine Long, and she was involved in the Marco Ellis, the Doge.
Okay,
stuff,
yeah.
Right? So I wrote a piece at the time after I was docked saying, look, there was all this funny stuff going on. You know, I had a Business Insider journalist looking into me on the other side of the Atlantic at the same time as this activist organization in the UK, Hope Not Hate, they're the ones who doxed me, were looking into me. Something was going on. And actually, if you dig into this woman, Catherine Long, you know, she glows, to use to use the internet slang. You know, she was at an Ivy League university. She did some kind of like State Department internship working on arms shipments to Iran. She worked for USAID in Central Asia. She speaks Farsi and Tajik. She's a Central Asia expert. And so at the time I said, look, I think there's government involvement here. And then I think I was vindicated possibly in that by the Marco Ellis stuff that happened recently. And I revisited Catherine Long and said, look, this is, you know, this is pretty sinister. But at the same time, it could easily have been a girlfriend as well, a disgruntled ex-girlfriend. I've got one or two of those. And so I thought, yeah, it could very well just have been, you know, that somebody... Because I was found out by a couple of girlfriends, and they didn't take it very well. Let me say that.
Well, so. or you know, or somebody else that you're associated with, you think you can trust, and you know, then they get co-opted. You know, Hope Not Hate finds something about them and says, you know, blackmails them or to give up. I mean, there's lots of ways they can do it, but regardless, I think it's perfectly reasonable to think that this is intelligence agencies doing this. If one country can't do it, they outsource it to another. That's how they
got. That's how Five Eyes works.
Exactly. Mm. So it's got to be at least in some way like gives you justification for what you've been doing, knowing that you've got intelligence agencies across the world hunting you down like a criminal when really all you've done, not to downplay your work, but is tell people to be healthy, give people insight into, you know, the scientific reality of microplastics and, you know, the health of eggs and natural eating and that sort of stuff. So, it you know, what is it about what you do that has intelligence agencies carrying out operations to unmask you?
Well, on the one hand, I think it's the transatlantic links I think they're interested in, you know. So I'm British, if you couldn't tell already. You know, I've been working from Britain, but I have a big audience. My principal audience has been in the US.
Right.
That's for various different reasons. I'm more interested in American politics than British politics. That's one of the main reasons. But so I think the British government is interested in what's going on. You know, who are these British people? Or who is someone like me? You know, why am I more interested in the US? Who am I talking to? Who am I involved with? What does that mean about the evolving nature of the right wing politics? You know, influences from America in the UK, that kind of thing. But I also think it's got a lot to do with the fact that actually I'm promoting a positive message, and they don't know how to deal with that in quite the same way. That's not really. When you think of the far right in Britain, you think of skinheads, and I mean, I know I've shaved my head, but I'm not a skinhead. But that is generally how the far right is portrayed, or even the right wing in the UK is portrayed. And you can peg them, and you can kind of box them in different ways, because you can link them to, you know, like marches and violence and you know, attacks against immigrants and all that kind of stuff. But actually, here you've got someone who's giving out a positive message, who's talking about the importance of physical health, of whole body health, of mental health, you know, doing positive things, taking control of your life. And that's a message that's really resonated. It's really resonated. You know, it's brought me nearly 300,000 followers on Twitter. I've sold a lot of books. It's in Tucker Carlson documentary. They don't know how to deal with it. And so I think actually what they've done basically is they've resorted to outsourcing work to this activist organization, Hope Not Hate, so that they can intimidate me. Because that's what they do. You know, these Antifa do it in the US. It's what happens with doxers in the US as well. So my friend Jonathan Kieperman, who runs Passage Press, which publishes Man's World, my book, and publishes Curtis Yarvin stuff, and they're publishing my new book. You know, he was doxed by The Guardian, by this chap called Jason Wilson, who works for like Portland Antifa, basically. simply as a publisher of right-wing books, you know. And it was there was a very implicit, barely kind of hidden threat in there. They published pictures of his marriage. They published details about his father's recent death, you know.
Right.
It's intimidation, and I think that's basically what they were trying to do with me as well. They were trying to intimidate me, you know. These radical left-wing people, they know who you are. They know where you live, or they think they know where you live. You know, they're watching you.
Right.
They could turn up at your house. So it's not, I'm not doing anything criminal. The government can't be interested in me legitimately as a criminal, as somebody who's involved in, you know, breaking the law. But what they can do is they can exert this kind of secondhand pressure via these activist organizations
right.
that are funded by the government. And Hope Not Hate has been funded by the British government, which is the, you know, which is the scandalous thing, conservative government as well. So, you know, hundreds of thousands of taxpayer pounds have been given to Hope Not Hate in recent years, including by conservative governments.
Right. So and because everything that you're saying, I mean, it's the NGOs, it's things like USAID. Exactly the same thing goes on in the UK, where it's they're non-governmental organizations, but they get all of their funding from the government. They're just not obliged to be under the same type of scrutiny that actual governmental programs are under. So it's actually very convenient for them. They can fund this group. That group can go out and act in ways that they would never be allowed to act. And Hope Not Hate is like a, you know, one of the main tent poles of this whole operation. And of course, you know, now in America, we've got this trend of swatting. And that is a very, you know, dangerous threat of having your information out there. If people know where you live, they can send the cops after you. They can come and attack you personally. So, yeah, I think, you know, doxing and swatting go hand in hand. And the doxing is always sort of a prerequisite for the swatting because you got to know where somebody else is to send the cops after them. So, yeah, clearly intimidation techniques attempting to be wielded against you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the swatting thing really, I mean, should be treated as attempted murder, I think. You know, I mean, people have died. And I actually wrote a piece about this for the Daily Caller, maybe last week or the week before, saying, you know, these people know what they're doing. There's no question.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not obviously it's intimidation and it's a message. You know, we know where you live. We can do this at any time. But also, actually, they're banking on the police turning up in the middle of the night. You're disoriented. You get out of bed. You know, the bright lights. Whatever. You reach for your gun. You're dead.
Yeah, absolutely. And the calls that they make are specifically designed to bring about the biggest and most dangerous response, right? I'm hiding. There's, you know, I mean, I've heard of people being swatted where the people who call say there are men with guns in my house and they're setting a trap for the police and they're going to kill the police as soon as they get there. So they go there, you know, expecting a firefight. It's extremely dangerous. It's obviously that's what they intend to happen. And there's not a lot of other reason to, you know, put out your information except to try to send a harassment your way. It's absolutely sickening. Now, I've spent the last hour or so sort of criticizing your home country, but all of Europe and actually, you know, I see a lot of your stuff because I get in the morning and basically everything on InfoWars is from overnight, which is when all the European news breaks. So when I wake up in the morning, it's really just like a litany of terrorist attacks, a litany of, you know, insane measures by the UK government. I mean, what is it going to take to save Europe at this point? Is it even possible? Because, again, I just have this Dutch wing coalition on the brink as Ukraine aid splits government. Poland, politicians' kids should be sent to the front line first. I mean, they're trying to start war. NATO is now saying even if peace is declared between Ukraine and Russia, we're still not going to have peace with Russia, and they'll still be our enemy. They're trying to draft people. I mean, all of this is just from today. Every day is like this. Europe just seems to be spiraling out of control, collapsing economically because of the Green New Deal. I mean, there's so many problems. I mean, what is up with Europe these days, man? I don't mean to criticize, but like, what are you guys doing over there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go to your average town in the UK, so if I go into my local town, you know, and do a bit of shopping at the weekend or whatever, people are so demoralized, you know, it's really tangible. I mean, things have been bad in the UK for a long time. I mean, a lot of small communities, urban centers didn't really recover from the financial crisis, you know. So there's this kind of lingering sense of decay. And then there's a much longer sense of decay, too, I think. I mean, I don't think we can underestimate the impact of the loss of empire.
Yeah.
So Britain really hasn't found a place for itself in the world since 1945, since the end of empire. I mean, we had a brief moment where we were close partners in the war on terror, and I think that provided some sense of kind of renewed international purpose for Britain. Although that was also very divisive, and, you know, you had millions of people marching in the streets against the Iraq War in 2003. But Britain certainly is a demoralized, declining nation. I mean, you know, it's easy to get trapped in these kind of echo chambers on Twitter, you know, where you see what basically appears to amount to kind of demoralization propaganda, you know, videos of people being attacked by migrants and all that kind of stuff. But the reality isn't much better than that, actually.
Right.
It's genuinely, you know, I'm 37, I'm nearly 40, and I've seen quite a lot of stuff happen, and it's very tangible now in a way that perhaps it wasn't. Mass migration is really biting in a way that it wasn't before, even before 2020. So, you know, you see now in small towns and villages, in very rural areas, you'll see sub-Saharan Africans. I mean,
right.
you'll see women carrying things on their heads,
right.
like it's, you know, Tanzania or something.
Right.
You know, it's so things are accelerating fast, but it's happening across the whole of Europe. I mean, we can fixate on the UK, and the UK is a kind of particularly bad example, I think, and the current government is bad. The current government is very bad, but it's happening in France,
yeah.
Holland, you know, the EU cancelled the election basically in Romania. Marine Le Pen in France, I mean, she may actually go to prison simply for the fact that she's possibly going to win the 2027 election.
Right.
I mean, so they're rolling out really extraordinary measures, I think, to counter the right. And it's hard to see actually how Europe can be saved at the ballot box.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but it makes sense that the demoralization is such a powerful force in the UK. And then here you are as somebody saying, actually, you can change things. Actually, you don't need to be demoralized. Actually, you can, if nothing else, at least feel good, at least go out and get fit and, you know, soak up some sun and not just be a miserable puddle. And but they want everybody to be these, you know, miserable, hopeless. And because it helps, because if you don't think anything can change, you're not going to try to change anything. I mean, it's very simple, but that is the playbook they're sort of operating on, is they have everybody in this state of just acceptance of whatever happens. You have no ability to change it. You have no ability to alter it. Just accept it. Whatever new modern horror they, you know, introduce to your culture, it's your job to change your morality to fit them and incorporate it into your belief system rather than impose your beliefs or, you know, insist that your belief system be upheld. And so really the demoralization is not just an outcome of their policies. It's like an engine which gives them the power to achieve what they're trying to achieve. And anybody trying to counteract that demoralization is therefore their enemy.
Yes. Yeah, of course. And we saw this dramatized very dramatically during the pandemic, of course. And I mean, I think the pandemic is the model really for the future. For the future of government and its relationship with citizens, terrorizing citizens, unleashing on citizens, basically tactics of psychological warfare.
I mean,
it really was a psychological warfare campaign. And that's what's happening now. You know, you're seeing this crazy agitation propaganda in the wake of the Southport stabbings, you know, terrible, terrible series of murders by the son of a Rwandan immigrant. You know, he went into a dance class and stabbed, I think it was 12 little girls and their teachers, and three of them died. And now what do we have? Well, we have television drama series about young white boys stabbing little girls. And it's transparent. It's incredibly transparent, but it's being laid on so thick, and people are, like I say, so demoralized. The economy is bad, you know, inflation is spiraling out of control, people have less money, public services, you know, the NHS. I mean, the NHS is basically our golden cow in the UK.
Right.
We don't have a national religion, we're not really Christians anymore, we worship the NHS, but people can't even see their doctor, people can't see a dentist. Living standards really are declining. And
yeah.
People really are hurting, but they're still struggling, I think, to put it all together and form a coherent picture. And the parliamentary system doesn't help. You know, we were talking about this before we went on air. We have this first-past-the-post system that makes it very difficult for insurgent parties ever to get into power. You have Labour and the Conservatives, and that's it. And we've got Reform now, and they're kind of breaking in, but it's already very clear that actually they're being captured by the system too. And by that specifically, I mean Nigel Farage. You know,
yeah.
He actually appears to be basically an establishment turncoat at this point. He wants to be Prime Minister above all.
Yeah, and that has been very bizarre to me. And I haven't been following as much the drama with Farage, so maybe we can get into that. But certainly with France and Germany, we see the way these parliamentary parties, I mean, you have the conservatives in France and Germany both siding with their communist parties to stop the far right in those countries. So there's also just a problem, I think, intrinsic in the right wing, where it's like, we would rather side with left-wing extremists than right-wing extremists, even though the right-wing extremists are correct and are right. You know, AFD, I wouldn't even call them extremists, but, as they see it, you know, AFD, they'd rather side with the open, literal communist than AFD. And then, of course, he's a turncoat as well. It's the same type of thing where promised, you know, deportations, promised to end the mass immigration. And yet, as soon as this is the new leader in Germany gets into office, he reverses course and promises millions and millions of more immigrants. So, yeah, there's got to be a certain point when the European people either just give up completely or, you know, decide the parliamentary system just isn't worth it. But what is going on with Nigel Farage? Because like I said, I haven't been following it that closely, but I understand there's like some major rifts in his party, accusations flying back and forth. What's going on with that?
Yeah, well, it's very disappointing. I mean, I thought before Donald Trump was elected, I thought, you know what will happen? Trump will get in on a platform of mass deportation. You know, 20 million people have to be deported. This will inspire the right throughout Europe, and, you know, mass deportation will be acceptable. People will say, okay, you know, you can win an election by promising this kind of thing. And before the election, Farage was saying, no, we can't do mass deportation in the UK. Just wouldn't happen. Not practical. Never going to happen. He did an interview a few days after Donald Trump was elected with Winston Marshall, and he said, you know what, actually, I think we're going to need to deport about 1.5 million people. So he was sort of coming around to it, and it looked like he was taking note, you know, and other parties in Europe, the AFD in particular, said, well, look, Trump has won on this policy, so, you know, we're going to say it out loud too, you know.
Yeah.
It's practical, people want it. We're going to give it to them. But Farage has been, he's kind of back and forth. He doesn't seem to really know what he wants beyond being prime minister. And I think he's worried about sounding too extremist.
Right.
I think he's, because, I mean, American and British politics are different.
Yeah.
They definitely are different.
Very much.
And, I mean, this explains particularly, you know, people have a real distaste for Trump as a kind of vulgar figure, right?
So right.
They kind of think, oh, Trump is vulgar, you know, and so we can't be friends with him.
Right.
And the same with Elon Musk as well. You know, people kind of don't like it. And I don't know if Americans actually appreciate that enough. Anyway, so Farage is kind of wary of being too associated with Trump, I think. But also there's this internal stuff going on. There's another reform MP. So there are five MPs for reform at the moment, a chap called Rupert Lowe. And he's very robust. He talks a lot about mass deportation, a lot about mass immigration. He talks a lot about grooming gangs as well. He doesn't hold fire. He doesn't mince his words at all. He's looking actually like an alternative leader for the party. And now there are these sort of trumped up allegations
right.
that have been leveled at him, that he's a bully, that he was making sexually inappropriate comments to staffers and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to get rid of him, basically, because he's an internal threat to Nigel Farage, because Nigel Farage wants to be the prime minister. So there's all of this really, really unpleasant infighting going on. There's all of this uncertainty about the kind of policies that reform want. At this critical time when actually they should be seizing the momentum, they should be preparing actually to replace the Conservatives at the very least as the second party in Britain. But what they're really doing, it looks like, is actually just becoming the Conservatives.
Right.
They're just kind of skin suiting the Conservatives. And it's disappointing because Britain really is in a bad way.
Yeah, well, not anymore. Keir Starmer is going to ban samurai swords. So I think it's smooth sailing from here on out. He's going to ban the ninja sword. So problem solved there. As long as we get the nunchucks off the street, everything will be safe. But no, it is completely insane. I don't know how much longer they can keep this up. And I feel for the people of Europe. When we get back on the other side, I want to talk about health. I want to talk about what RFK Jr. is doing. You know, so much of what you report is just going through scientific papers about microplastics and their prevalence and the danger they pose to people. So I'm so glad that this conversation is being mainstream. We've been, of course, promoting this at InfoWars forever, and it's finally getting some mainstream traction, and they're doing everything they can to scuttle that as hard as they possibly can. So we'll be back on the other side with Raw Egg Nationalist. You can follow him on X at BabyGravy9. And I'm so glad you've never changed that. BabyGravy9, mansworldmag.online, raweggstack.com. And, of course, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere, folks. It's the American Journal. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, everything we broke down over the years has turned out to be dead on. Most of the time when we were a little bit off, it was because things were much worse than we were saying. But in the main, we've been dead on. That's our mission, be the most accurate out there. MSM's mission is to deceive you, lie to you because they're mercenaries for the globalist. And we're funded by viewers and listeners like you. So we try to bring you products that really work, that you're going to love, so you come back and get them again and again. So many of you are going to be excited to hear that our ultimate turmeric formula is back in stock. The Shilajit is the best quality. The Irish Sea Moss is available as well. You're going to want to reorder it. But for viewers that haven't ever gotten the products and haven't experienced them, you are missing out. If our information is game-changing and one of a kind, imagine what the products are like. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. There's not just great supplements, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, and more at thealexjonesstore.com, powering the American resistance to globalists worldwide and winning.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic, but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate Sambucus is available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Now, Sambucus is a fancy word for elderberry. This elderberry concoction is mixed with vitamin C and zinc. It's gummies. They're absolutely delicious. I take two of them every single day as prescribed by the directions on the bottle. Helps with things like healthy stress levels, antioxidant and immune support. It promotes respiratory health, seasonal support, and it's GMO and gluten-free. Now, not only with Ultimate Sambucus gummies are you getting a delicious way to fight for your immune system, but you're keeping InfoWars on the air. We know that Alex Jones is under relentless attack. We know that InfoWars and this crew are under relentless attack as well. And it's not just us they're coming after. Frankly, it's you. They want to silence you. They want to kill your health. They want to kill your mind. And they want to subjugate you under a new world order government. So as far as I'm concerned, by going to thealexjonesstore.com and getting Ultimate Sambucus gummies, you are not only fighting for your health, but you're fighting against the new world order in the most effective way possible. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now.
I have been so hot and heavy on the news the last few weeks that I have not come up. Yesterday, I didn't plug one time the whole show because I was just so focused and pissed off about what's going on, because we're winning, but the fight is so dangerous. This is the most intense part right now. And so please go to thealexjonesstore.com. We have the Great Atomic Defense, the strongest, greatest, concentrated of all the known herbs and compounds to boost your immune system. Everybody should be on it, especially this time of year, with the limited edition Trump 2024 Battle for the Republic coin. On one side, on the other side, the commemorative inauguration. There's a limited amount of those. About as of this morning, 1/4 of them are gone. There'll be no more made after that. This funds the operation. So I want to thank all of you that have supported. I'll encourage those that haven't gone to thealexjonesstore.com to take action now. The supplements are the best you're going to find anywhere. Become a VIP member for $30 a month. Cancel any time. Get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special sales, special discounts, special offers, and products only to members. Thealexjonesstore.com.
InfoWars.com is tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, folks, we're back. We're back. And unfortunately, I got news to bring you. But fortunately, I got the right person to talk about it with. Raw Egg Nationalist is my guest in studio. Follow him on X at BabyGravy9, mansworldmag.online, raweggstack.com is where you can follow him. And like I was saying, you post a lot of stuff on InfoWars from Europe. When I come in the morning, it's all the overnight news, which is usually just a litany of terrorist attacks. And here we have another one just breaking minutes ago. Mass stabbing leaves 5 people wounded in Amsterdam. A victim of a stabbing with multiple injuries near Dam Square, which is the main square right there in the center of Amsterdam, helped by ambulance workers. Live footage of the historic square shows mass crowd gathering on a cordoned off area with the trauma helicopter, ambulances, and police vans in attendance. Was it an incel, a right-wing maniac? No. Safe to say we know who it will be, and our governments will continue to ignore the problem. That's the article from Daily Mail. So I guess no information as of yet as to who committed the stabbing, but I think we can surmise who this might have been. I mean, it's practically a daily situation in Europe now. I don't know if there's been a day in the last week that there was an attack. In Germany earlier today, we had the video. I mean, it's so much. It's to the point. I'm almost sorry for saying it. It's like, I don't even see it as newsworthy anymore. I mean, this is from this morning, Visegrad 24. Several people wounded in Berlin after a man drove a car up on a sidewalk and struck a large group of people. And you can see the emergency response there. I mean, it is daily at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think also, actually, what you need to remember is, you know, the grooming gang scandal.
Right.
Particular, that's been going on for decades. So it's not that it's just daily. It's been going on for decades. These kind of outrages have been taking place silently, or not so silently in the background for a long time. And it does make you wonder. I mean, we were talking before the break. You know, what will it take? What will it take? How many Christmas markets need to be? How many crowds need to be run through with by a car or by a lorry? You know, how many people need to be stabbed before people actually say? Before people even actually say, look, mass immigration isn't working.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the very first stage. That's not saying mass deportations need to happen. That's just saying, actually, there's something very wrong. And people have kind of reached that stage, but I think they're also actually kind of scared to say it. So,
right.
It's a dreadful situation. It's a dreadful situation, but the way that these stories are reported, of course, you know, they won't say, I mean, if this chap, assume it was a chap, was saying Allahu Akbar. I mean, that's report that right at the beginning. Don't wait, but they do wait, of course. They just say, you know, somebody stabbed 5 people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the media is complicit in it. Absolutely. The media is a big part of it. And I think one of the strengths, at least in the US system, is that you have alternative media like InfoWars. We don't really have that in the UK, and it's a big part of the reason, actually, I think, why people aren't quite as awake as they could be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, as you pointed out, there's this Netflix show, was it Atonement? What's it?
Adolescence.
Adolescence, yeah, Adolescence. And so it was a real-life event where it was, was he the son of Rwandan refugees?
That was a separate thing. So that was the Southport stabbings, but there was a similar case where, basically a sub-Saharan African, stabbed a teenage girl. I think she was on her way to school. And, and that became the basis of this show, Adolescence, which is about a young white boy who basically goes on incel forums and, you know,
right,
takes the red pill, listens to Andrew Tate, and then decides to stab a girl.
Right. And so they race-swap the main character. Mm. And make it about a completely different topic. And then the bizarrest thing about it is that there's been more action because of this fake movie of a non-existent crime than the actual crimes that have gone on. So you've got part, they're reading it, they're watching the movie in Parliament, they're making speeches about it, they're saying this is a big problem we need to deal with, and it's fake. It doesn't exist. Whereas the real stories, the real events go completely unaddressed. And so when you say the media, you know, has a role to play in this, it's like they somehow get to dictate what people's concerns are. And even though the real threats are going unaddressed, it's the fake threats that get all the attention. And you can't achieve that without massive media control.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think, again, to go back to the pandemic, that's the model. That's
right.
What we're seeing. We're seeing We're seeing now the government and the media working together in lockstep, actually, to promote an agenda that's actually counter to the interests of the British people, that is actually, you know, part and parcel of replacing them. Actually, that's the only way. You know, we've seen the emergence of Conor McGregor in Ireland, which is an interesting thing. That's an interesting development. He came over and met President Trump. You know, he's been an outspoken critic of the Irish government, and now he's said, "I'm going to run for Prime Minister. I'm going to run for, you know, to lead the Irish people out of this terrible, terrible place that they've been taken to by the politicians."
Ireland might be the strangest one because, you know, as nonsensical as it is, there is still the argument where it's like, "Well, we colonized their countries, now they're coming to ours, we can't really complain." I think that's fallacious or nonsensical anyway. I don't accept that argument in the first place, but it still exists for places like England who colonized so many places. Ireland was a colony. It has none of that historical guilt, so they can't play on that, play that up in the minds of the people to get them to accept their punishment, essentially. But also, they got 100 years of resistance against the English only to give up their whole country in the course of a couple years through mass immigration. It is insane what's happening in Ireland.
Well, it's not 100 years. I mean, Ireland has been an independent nation for 100 years, but actually the Irish have been resisting the Anglo-Normans for 1,000 years. I mean, Ireland's been basically at war with the English, certainly the English rulers, for 1,000 years. I mean, they fought the bloodiest struggle at incredible cost. And gained their independence, and then they've thrown it away.
And now they're planting, migrant centers in the middle of these small towns where you've got the police bodily moving, little old ladies out of the way to force sub-Saharan Africans into their communities.
Well, what's amazing about that as well is that they're calling them plantations, and plantation is the word that was used to describe Protestant settlements in Ireland after Elizabeth I. So they would have plantations in Northern Ireland. Londonderry was a plantation. So they're using this word, that has a long history, a long, very, very evocative history in Ireland to describe these places. But when workers find out, oh, actually, this is what we're doing, we're building a migrant center, they'll walk off. You know, Irish people will stop working on these things. So what do? They bring in foreign workers.
Right.
It's crazy. I mean, there's this timeless passage in Aristotle's Politics where he talks about the art of the tyrant, what tyrants do, the kind of ways that they maintain their rule. One of the things that Aristotle says is the tyrant prefers foreigners over native people,
Right.
But what he meant actually, or what he was describing, was the Greek practice of tyrants maintaining retinues drawn from foreigners. So, you're a Greek tyrant. Well, all the men around you, all the men who protect you, your bodyguards, your advisors, they're foreign because they're the closest to you. And if they were native, they would kill you eventually.
Right. Well, they'd be a threat to your rule in the same way that the Romans emperors would surround themselves with eunuchs because they couldn't, found a rival dynasty.
Yeah. So, but what Aristotle actually couldn't conceive is what's happening now, which is that actually tyrants are replacing their populations with foreigners. It's not just that they're keeping foreign retinues. They're actually wholesale replacing their own people with foreigners. So we've entered a kind of tyranny that actually is far more extreme than anything even the great theorists of tyranny could have conceived of in the ancient world. It's really something to behold.
It's anathema to human nature, I think. That's why I think it's so hard for those of us still thinking clearly to wrap our minds around why this is happening or how it's happening. It almost seems like a tactic. I mean, some of the things that are being done are so outrageous. It's like, is this being done on purpose just so people, when they hear it, don't believe it because it's so outrageous? I mean, even stuff, you've got the Independent in Ireland writing an article that says, to save the pension system, Ireland needs 5 million migrants. Mm. It's like, okay, the population of Ireland is 5 million. Mm. So they're openly saying to save the pension system, we have to replace everybody in Ireland. And they're openly saying it. And it's like, I don't know, I can lead you to water. I can't make you drink. I mean, they're saying it. You have to be the one to actually think well, what does this mean? What are they saying? They're promoting genocide, in my opinion. So, how do you get people to care about that? And when they don't, apparently.
Well, Olaf Scholz a few years ago said to sustain Germany's pension system, then they would need 1.5 million migrants a year. At the height of the Ukraine war, I think in 2022, I think the Ukrainian labor minister said we're going to need, I think it was 5 or 10 million migrants post-war. I mean, it's so on the nose. It's so incredibly on the nose. You think, are they really saying this? You know, that the flower of Ukrainian manhood is being slaughtered in ditches and trenches. And you're talking about, you know, importing basically people from the third world in their stead.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, and it was said openly. It wasn't like a secret communique. I mean, it was a statement that was put out by the Ukrainian labor minister.
No, it's crazy that they're even making that statement. And then, of course, in Germany and France and every other European country that's tried this, you have exactly the same situation where is we need all these migrants to boost up the pensions. The migrants come in. They all go on welfare. The problem only gets worse. Suddenly they're raising the retirement age, you know, by 5 years in France and Germany because you have to keep working because the pension system still insolvent even more so because we brought in a bunch of people that are just draining resources instead of adding. And instead of going, okay, that didn't work, let's stop this, they go, well, we just need even more now. The more the problem gets worse, the more they, you know, suggest this solution that only makes things worse. It's like this feedback loop. That's so obvious, I don't know how we have to be the ones making this argument, but here we are.
Yeah, quite. Well, I mean, look, Twitter is a great place, actually, to be for stats and analysis. That's one of the things that I like about Twitter, is you'll get people posting stats and analyzing them, and you'll often see immigration stats posted about the economic contributions of migrants.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of European nations actually have stopped collecting that kind of data because they know how explosive it is. They know that, you know, if you can show that actually the average migrant is a net drain, hundreds of thousands of euros, you know, or even €1 million over a lifetime, then people are going to start to think, well, actually, you know, what are we doing here?
The argument kind of falls apart. Mm. Yeah.
But there are a few countries that still do that. Denmark is one of them, notably. And there have been a lot of interesting stats that have come out of Denmark that have shown, you know, the only migrants who make any kind of contribution to the Danish state are European migrants and Western European migrants at that. So even Eastern European migrants don't really make a positive contribution. You know, so yes, I mean, I think if people knew the full extent actually to which these people are a drain on the system, then again, that would be very radicalizing. But the official ideology, of course, is we need people to prop up the pension system. We need people to do the jobs, etc. We need doctors and lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, actually, the kind of people who are coming are people who will spend a lifetime on benefits, who will contribute nothing, and also commit loads of crime. But it's been going on for, you know, I mean, mass immigration began in the UK in 1997 officially, really, with Tony Blair. Net migration, I think, was 50,000 in 1997, and now it's over 1 million a year. Legally, it's been going on for a long time, but people still cling to these outdated arguments about the economic benefits of migration. And so, one of the important things actually is trying to educate people. This is the reality of mass migration. You're told this by the politicians. You're told this by the apologists of free trade and open borders. People like Fraser Nelson in the UK, for example. But actually, the reality is very different. And you can see the reality when you go to your local town. You can see the reality when you go to London now. I mean, London has changed enormously. I mean, I hadn't been to London since before the pandemic until 2023. I went back and it was a different city.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
No, it absolutely is. And again, it would be one thing if this, you know, if this was one country in Europe that was doing this and we could all look at it and go, hey, if that's what you want to do, it's your prerogative. But the fact that every single capital in Europe is experiencing exactly the same thing. Clearly, this is a coordinated continent-wide attack against the people of Europe. And, you know, I think it has to do with the fact that we were talking about it actually before we went live. But, you know, Europe has this sort of revolutionary spirit that's been deadened quite effectively over the last century or so, or maybe even more. But, you know, America has this revolutionary spirit because of our founding, because of the history that we teach. But I always argue that was an outgrowth of what England had been engaged in for, you know, 500 years at that point, from the Magna Carta to the English Revolution, Oliver Cromwell. I mean, say what you want about it, and there's the religious aspect to it. But at the end of the day, it was about sort of asserting liberty against tyrannical monarchs that is deeply rooted in European history. And it just seems like Europeans in history have been the ones willing to stand up against tyranny. Well, that's very inconvenient for a tyrant. Get rid of those people with that historical and even genetic, you know, heritage of liberty, and bring in people who, you know, if they're from some village in Africa and live in a mud hut, and you can give them a tiny little apartment, it would be unacceptable to a normal British person, that level of living, but it's a huge upgrade from the third world. They'll let you get away with anything. They'll go along with whatever tyranny you want to impose because their life is so much better than it was, you know, in the third world country where they came from. So it seems like they're trying to get rid of Europeans because Europeans have the streak that brought about human rights and, you know, created all of these great things that are a barrier to their total control.
Yeah, I think you're right about the history as well. I think rediscovering, say for the British people, rediscovering British history is an essential part, actually, of rediscovering our freedom. So, yes, I mean, the Americans and the British, you know, that was a fork in the road. The revolution was a fork in the road. And the Americans went one way with the British tradition of liberty, and we've gone the other, actually, obviously, over the last 250 years. But before that point, beyond that point, in the Civil War, in the Glorious Revolution, right back to Magna Carta, even perhaps arguably back to Anglo-Saxon times.
Sure.
You know, we share the same fundamental concepts of liberty. We share the same fundamental history, the same relationship to power, the same idea about the necessary limits on power, all that kind of stuff. And it remains for us actually to rediscover it. And that's part of the reason, I think, obviously, why British people aren't taught their own history, and why actually European people aren't taught their own history either. I mean, I had a German girlfriend a few years ago, and she said to me, the German education system, history in particular, is just the Holocaust all the way through. That's all it is. It's hammered into you from a very early age. You should be ashamed of being German. You know, Germany has no history to be proud of. But Germany has...
Which is the craziest thing to say. I mean, it's like...
I know.
What?
Yeah. So Germany, there's just this one central event that should make you feel ashamed of being German and justifies all of the social policies, all of these progressive social policies. Well, it's not quite that bad in the UK, but it's still nevertheless the same. You know, I mean, even when I was at school in the early 2000s at secondary school, you know, post 11 to 18... It was slavery, you know, it was the British Empire, it was the evils of the British Empire. We had some of the Holocaust. There wasn't anything to be proud of. It wasn't like, you know, actually you have an identity as a British person, and that identity involves, among other things, you know, this kind of ideological creation of liberty as we understand it today.
Right.
None of that. And I think that's very deliberate. I think it is a deliberate way of, you sever people from their history, you sever them from their identity, and you can do things to them that you couldn't otherwise do if they were aware of who they are and where they've come from.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the total inversion, especially when it comes to the UK, because UK ended slavery, but now you're the one responsible for it. UK ended the Holocaust. Now you have to, you know, watch out or else you're going to commit the next Holocaust. And so you have to have, you know, speech control to stop that eventuality. So it's even more outrageous for the UK. At least in Germany, you could say, well, there was the Holocaust and we got to teach it. But for the UK, you guys ended the Holocaust, but now it's being used to, you know, browbeat white people and convince them not to have an identity or collective policies that would benefit white people. That's evil, even though the UK is the one that ended the Holocaust. So there's an inversion that takes place as well.
Absolutely. Yes, it's not simply a neglect of history. I think it is an inversion. It's a very deliberate narrative that maybe, like you say, you know, maybe it fits Germany. You know, maybe the Germans should reflect on that event. But why the British?
I mean, yeah, why the Americans?
What did we contribute to that? How did we you know, manifest that, as it were? I mean, it's an insidious thing, but it's working. It works ever so well.
Yeah.
And that's why they continue to do it. That's why, for instance, you know, they replace white actors in period dramas.
Yep.
I mean, it's everywhere you see history in Europe, you see this process taking place, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, that's why Anne Boleyn in the Channel 5 drama is black. I mean, they're saying you don't have a history.
Right.
You have no ownership of your own history, you know. And, Yeah, it's an insidious process. It's a dangerous process. And when people object to it, and they're just branded racist, of course, which is...
Absolutely. Well, because it's convenient, and that word has conquered a continent. But this is so interesting that you bring this up. Jack Posobiec tweeted this today out from Grok. Chinese audiences are boycotting the Snow White movie due to Rachel Zegler's casting, which deviates from the traditional skin-as-white-as-snow image, causing a cultural disconnect. Her appearance, not her acting, fuels the backlash, seen as pushing Western woke values, rejected as Baiju, which means, like, you know, stupid leftist Westerner. Plot changes in CGI dwarfs also contributed to the poor reception in China. But I think that's such a great, you know, illustration, because it's true. You know, if any other race is race swapped, white people get really mad. But then you race swap a white person and they go, well, but that's OK. It's like almost a weird inverted like white supremacy where it's like, well, we're white. We can take it. It's fine when it happens to us because we're white after all. So it's fine. And it's weird because then you've got the Chinese going, nah, Snow White's supposed to be white. This is wrong. This is messed up, which is what white people's reaction is when it's other races being race swapped. So it's just this self-hatred whites have been pumped with that is really inexplicable to me and hypocritical to the nth degree.
Well, what's interesting, actually, I did see a video on Twitter the other day, a TikTok video, where there was a young Zoomer type chap and he was dancing, and the caption was something like, you know, things are so bad, you know, when you can't get a home and things are so bad that actually all of the like the decades of anti-white agit propaganda just, you know, kind of like disappear, evaporate.
It's right.
Like, I mean, I do think that actually people are starting to see through it. People are definitely starting to see through it. And it's working out in ways that are unusual. I mean, you know, we all probably predicted that the Zoomers would be the most woke generation. They would, you know, they've been spoon fed this stuff from birth. I mean, we were spoon fed it a bit later, you know, when perhaps our minds had formed a little bit better and we were maybe better equipped to resist it. But actually, you know, these people, these kids who've been spoon fed it from the cradle, they're actually rejecting it the most violently, in large part because actually they're just looking around at the economic situation, at the social situation. I mean, it was very interesting what happened to that Harry Sisson chap.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's so funny.
Yeah, I haven't even really talked about that much, but it was imminently predictable that the, you know, left wing spokesperson would be, you know, brought down by accusations of sexual impropriety when really it was just like text messages or something. I mean, the whole thing is silly, but that's
all that the left has to offer young people.
Right.
You know, it's like if you're a young white man, then you're a whipping boy.
Yeah.
And it's not a wonder that people are waking up to that and resisting it. And
yeah.
Saying, well, actually, you know what? Maybe the alternative isn't so bad.
Yeah. Well, and I just, you know, I just always try to point out, like I say to white people, like, look, white people, you're not special, all right? You deserve the same protection as everybody else. You're not immune to damage. You can go away. You could die. You could, you know, be destroyed. You're not immortal. You're not, you know, more special than other races. And if every other race deserves these protections, you do too. Stop thinking you're special. Again, sort of a weird, like, anti-white supremacy message of just like, guys, you're not special. Stop acting like you're immune to this stuff. We haven't even gotten into health and stuff, and that's you know where I find your work most valuable is, you know, going through scientific studies and things. You got to go to babygravy9 on x.com/babygravy9 at babygravy9, mansworldmag.online, raweggstack.com. I of course wrote an article for you about the Alamo that ties in directly into all of this. Because again, they try to take, you know, the lesson of the Alamo, the lesson of English history, all of this is people can stand up, resist tyranny, come together for a good cause against all odds and still come out successful. And that's the message they don't want people to learn, and why people like you have to be shut down. Thank you so much for joining us. So good to see you in person. You're at NatalCon this weekend. Tickets are sold out, so you can't get them if you want them, but he'll be there. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
It was an absolute pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine. BabyGravy9 on X, mansworldmag.online, raweggstack.com. That's about going to do it for us. Stay tuned. The Alex Jones Show begins in 90 seconds, folks. Don't go anywhere. You can support us at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll see you next time.
Quite frankly, I didn't develop
Optimal Human when Bigley came on as a big sponsor. And I told them the supplements I wanted from the companies I wanted. They went out and did what I wanted. People love them, and they're incredible. The turmeric, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it. But they'd had this out for years, and I thought, my green caps are great. And, you know, this other company I use is great because, you know, green superfoods are amazing. And then I finally took it, and Harrison Smith took it, and I was like, my God. And by then, we've been selling it 4 or 5 months, and it was already a top seller. The problem is there's so many ingredients, and it's so hard to source, and it's so clean, high standards, that it's sold out most of the time. We finally got a decent shipment of it in, but we never offered it for subscription because we just couldn't keep it. When you subscribe at thealexshowstore.com, and then they keep it back for you so it never sells out. So go to thealexshowstore.com and get your Optimal Human and so many other incredible products today. Check out all the great Patriot apparel. Make your life more healthy and enriched, and help keep us on the air as we take on the deep state at point blank range and win.
Here's where all eyes now are on gold and silver. Because gold went over $3,000 an ounce, it's at an all-time high. That's a very strong technical and psychological threshold number, that 3,000. So now that the world is looking at gold, the world is also going to be looking at silver. So even the massive growth that we've already seen, I'm guessing it's just the beginning.
Gut level, where do you think gold is in a month?
3,100 in a month, like in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then I think it gets to 3,200 by the beginning of the summer. And we could literally see 4,000 as momentum starts to gather and as the eyes of the world get on it. And then silver, you know, probably 50 to 75.
People need to call you, do a free consultation, leave your name and number, 720-605-3900, kepm.com/gold. Do the form. They'll call you back. They'll do a free consultation. They can roll over your IRAs, 401ks. Do it now, folks. Dr. Kirk Elliott, thank you so much.
My pleasure. See ya.
It's good to be right, isn't it? Wow.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.